This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network, which includes the Erotica Podcast, Erotica Sci-Fi and Fantasy, Erotica Loving Wives, and the Spotify podcast Erotica Taboo Podcast for more intense sexual themes. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content. Links for everything are in the podcast description. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction, with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. Rescuing the Fallen by Mediocre Author. 1. The Ally. Thomas I can feel a headache coming on. I rub my temples as I stare at the endless, unintelligible stream of alphanumeric symbols displayed on the computer screen in front of me. They all begin to blend into a mishmash of complete nonsense. They aren't nonsense, however, of that I am certain. Somewhere buried deep within this encryption lies the insidious roots of a creation which I can only describe as humanity's greatest monster. I'll call it what it is, mass hypnosis. But in all fairness, that title is too clumsy, too crude to express what this is. This code implants itself into the human mind. Scientists have long described the human brain as a complex CPU. Well, someone finally figured out how to copy/paste files into it. And the person or persons responsible must have only had one goal in mind, the complete subjugation of the entire female gender. Somehow. The payload, as it is most often referred to, only targets adult women. Once the information has been viewed, the victim begins spiraling downward towards a mental mindset that devalues her humanity entirely. That would be bad enough, but the bastards made sure that this thing was viewed by just about every human on Earth before its ill effects were even known. Now we are faced with a world of women who long to debase themselves for the satisfaction of men. I have to give its misogynistic creators one bit of credit. The code itself is brilliant. It has to be. It has programmers with far more experience than me scratching their heads. Although, as each day passes, it seems like fewer and fewer programmers are continuing the struggle to crack this code. Whatcha working on? A soft, feminine voice coos from just behind me. I snap out of my musings, but I refuse to turn around. I'm working, Abigail. That's all that matters. And I am incredibly busy. Please go away. Abigail leans over my shoulder in an inappropriate manner. I can see in my periphery that the top buttons of her blouse are undone, and if I were to look back, I'm sure I would be viewing a face full of cleavage. It's almost lunchtime, you know? Do you want to grab a bite with me? I'd love to hear about your progress. I can't hear any chatter coming from outside my small office. This isn't completely out of the ordinary, since it is close to lunch. However, part of me suspects that the rest of my fellow employees might have left early to give me time alone with this lady. I shake my head, attempting to banish the thought. Not everyone here wants to see me fail. It's only a few bad apples. My progress! I spin around in my chair, and Abigail is forced to take a step back. I was correct. Her blouse is just as revealing as I expected. Above her well-endowed chest, I see the collar adorning her neck. It is the symbol of her submission. Well, let me see, Abigail. I am currently working on decoding the payload, and I'm searching for a way to reverse its effects, but I'm pretty sure you knew that. My voice is thick with sardonic annoyance. Her smile never falters, as she shrugs and twirls her silky, blonde hair like a ditzy high school girl. I don't know why you'd want to do a thing like that, Tom. I'm a woman, you know, and I love the effect that the programming has had on us. Her lips form into a sultry pout, and she leans forward again, placing her breasts eye level with my chair. Why would you want to rob that away? Why? I ask, stroking my chin in mock consideration. Why would I want to free all women from bondage and mental enslavement? I don't know, why do you think? Abigail leers at me, lustfully. There is a fierce arousal in her eyes, and I'm forced to remind myself that there's no honesty behind it. Someone sent her in here to do this. She's only acting, pretending, playing a role, but I'll be damned if it isn't a stellar performance. If I didn't already know better, I would believe that she was actually interested in me. Fortunately, I do know better. Abigail's humanity is absent. My mind is aware of this, even as every deceptive action of her body tells me otherwise. Her words seem completely genuine, but I already know better than to trust her. She is already a tool for her master. She'd do anything to please him, that includes trying to seduce me. The Abigail that I've always known must be in there, somewhere. The real Abigail. The one that I could trust and rely on. Not this disgusting mockery. She must be there, but I can't see her. I can't imagine, Tom, baby! Her tone is infected with a manufactured sexual craving that is indistinguishable from true desire. Would you prefer to slip under my desk, let me pop my dick in your mouth, and you can think about it better that way? I speak the words through clenched teeth, barely concealing the anger that I feel. She does not seem to notice. The woman's bright, blue eyes fly wide open, and she nods vigorously. Oh, Tom! I thought you'd never ask. She starts to bend down onto all fours to crawl under my desk. Wait! I say quickly, before she can reach the floor. She freezes immediately. She is nothing if not obedient. I never said I wanted that. I just asked if it was what you wanted. I mean, a smart, capable FBI agent such as yourself climbing under the desk of a fellow agent and servicing him orally, that would have to be completely humiliating, right? Only a brain-dead, worthless slut would be interested in that. Is that really what you want? She looks confused, but again she nods vehemently. Her mouth is practically drooling, and her hands are clenching and unclenching rhythmically at her sides. She reminds me of a crack addict.
Oh well, that's too damn bad.
Because what I want is for you to leave my office, go back to your master, and tell him that I said, fuck off. Tell him that I won't be deterred from my job, just because I'm offered a BJ from a literal human puppet who has no genuine love for me. Can you do that? Again her face is plastered with consternation, but she nods dutifully. Abigail, I know these words are meaningless to you in your current state, but I want you to know that I'm really trying to save you. Only a few months ago, you were an equal to me, a damn good agent. Seeing you reduced to this sex-crazed, secretarial bimbo, it hurts. I hate it for you. I just hope that somehow the genuine Abigail can hear me. If so, please know that I'm doing everything I can. Once again her bubbly, charming face resurfaces, as if nothing unusual has happened. That's so silly, sugar. She smiles. I'm happier than ever, now that I'm collared. And who collared you? I ask, feigning a smile. I'd love to speak with him, face to face. Was it Gregory? He was always leering at you before this shitshow started. Was he the one who claimed you like a stray dog? Made you into his personal fuck toy? Abigail waggles a finger at me, smiling wider than ever. Nah. We both know I don't have to tell you that. Well, whoever your master is, tell him I said that he should go shit and fall back in it. And tell him that he can just forget about using a piece of ass like you to learn anything about my progress with the case. Thanks, sweetheart. You've been ever so helpful. The sarcasm is thick in my voice. She slowly steps from my office, swaying her body seductively. Her short skirt is quite unprofessional, and it accentuates her perfectly round ass. It would be an amazingly arousing display, if it was real. I can still hear the click-clack of her heels as she retreats. Turning back to my computer, I bury my head in my hands. Mistreating Abigail is pointless, I know. This is not her fault. It's like being angry at a gunshot victim for bleeding on your carpet. Still, her performance was so compelling. I try desperately to ignore the tightness that has arisen in the crotch of my pants. I am a man, damn it. A real man with normal human desires. But I am also a man who values love and affection from those that I care about. No fucking mind-controlled whore is going to make me stray from that course. I swear to it. As I run my fingers through my hair in exasperation, I can feel the cool metal of my wedding band dragging across my scalp. It is there for a reason. I love my wife. 2. The partner. James I can feel Chief Bogart staring at me disinterestedly over the top of his massive desk. He is a fat man, long past his prime. This is my first time meeting him, but he immediately gives me the impression of a suck-up who earned his position through scheming, rather than merit. It's probably not a fair judgment, but I can't shake it. I can't get over the size of his desk. Even for a man of his rank in the FBI, his desk is huge. It must have cost a fortune. It gives him a strong authoritarian look that belies his unfavorable gut and balding hair. I wasn't expecting you so early, Agent. He waves his hand, gesturing for me to fill in the blank. Agent Owens, sir! James Owens, but everyone just calls me Jim. The older man nods, not truly seeming to care. He motions for me to close the door, and for some strange reason, he seems distracted, as if he wishes that I was anywhere else. Usually agents knock, before they enter my office, Mr. Owens.
I'm sorry, sir!
I smile, but it is not returned. I'm new here, and I guess I got a little lost. Bogart carefully studies the transfer papers I have just presented to him. Suddenly his eyes light up with realization.
Owens!
Yes!
You're the agent they send us to help with the payload problem, aren't you?
I nod.
Yes, sir. I was told that Thomas Evans was currently leading the case. Is that true?
It is his turn to nod.
Yes, he is. He's one floor down from us at this very moment. I understand that you two were classmates at the academy.
Yes, sir.
I smile again, and I feel relief when Bogart's expression softens somewhat.
Tell me, Mr. Owens, what are your thoughts on Agent Evans?
Be honest.
I raise an eyebrow in surprise. That question seems out of place. Why would he be asking me about Evans? The man is his agent, after all. Nevertheless, I answer quickly. I don't want to piss off my new boss on my first day.
He was an outstanding cadet at the academy, sir.
Top of the line.
Straight as an arrow.
My answer feels a bit generic, but in Evans' case, it is entirely true.
And how well do you think he can handle this case?
I scratch my head at the unusual line of questioning.
I'm sure he can handle it very well, sir. I recall that he has a background in programming, so this seems right up his alley.
Bogart huffs loudly.
And what are your official thoughts on the payload?
It's a human rights violation, sir.
The worst one to occur in my lifetime.
These inquiries seem all over the place. Perhaps Bogart is just trying to size me up. To see how I deal with unusual circumstances? If so, I don't intend on disappointing him. Bogart nods stiffly and then leans forward in his chair. His voice grows much quieter, and I have to strain to hear him.
And what is your, unofficial, opinion of the payload?
Before you answer, just know that I've spoken previously with your superiors.
I feel caught, but somehow I don't exactly feel in trouble. My lips involuntarily turn upwards into an honest, sneaky smile.
personally, sir. I'm sort of a big fan. I have collared two women, and I'd love to get a third.
He laughs heartily, and his eyes grow wide, as if he's very impressed.
Fantastic. I knew I'd pick the right man for the job.
Leaning back in his chair, he lowers his head and speaks to someone underneath the giant desk.
You can come on out, Miss Blair. Owen's one of the good ones.
He clears his throat loudly, and he locks eyes with me. I half expect him to give me a sly wink.
Owens here understands that men need their, you know, shoes shine from time to time.
A sleek, dark-skinned, feminine form slithers out from beneath the desk on his side. She stands quietly, meekly awaiting further instructions. Her black, curly hair is fixed neatly in a professional bun, although some of the curls have worked loose. Tellingly, she has no tools for shoes shining. I can't help but smile. Shoes shining indeed. She's obviously been polishing something, but it wasn't shoes. The girl's bottom lip and chin are streaked with a shot of white fluid. It doesn't take a genius to understand the situation. Her eyes gaze at the ground in a blend of overwhelming reverence and fear for the pudgy man seated before her. It's truly an awe-inspiring sight.
How does this situation make you feel, Agent Owens?
Impressed, sir.
I reply, and I watch as Bogart's smile widens.
Any man would love to have such an attractive woman shine his shoes.
Miss Blair's body is tall, full, and shapely, and I don't think she could be a day over 25. Looking at her smooth, ebony legs, I feel a twinge of jealousy. Here she is, held enraptured and meek, under the command of a man who never could have tamed her in the old world. Before the incident. Before the fall of women. She is a sexy bitch, way too good for Bogart, but she has no idea. Most striking is her collar, which is proudly displayed on her neck. Below that, her clothes look like a semi-revealing secretarial outfit. To me, they seem like the most immodest clothes one could possibly wear to a governmental office job, without raising any official concerns. Well, in fact, her clothes would seem that way, if her raw cleavage wasn't still mostly exposed. I can see that her blouse is unbuttoned most of the way, and her bright pink bra is clearly visible, pressing her breasts tight against one another. Bogart seems to notice this as an afterthought, and he slaps one of her tits with his bare hand. The smack is loud, and even through her dusky skin, red color begins to show.
Button your top up, you stupid slut!
Bogart barks.
This isn't a brothel. Can't you see I have company? And here you are with your titties out, like the stupid, brainless slut you are.
It is an amazing image. This beautiful, swarthy female is standing obediently and paying homage to a man who is both striking and demeaning her, and she is clearly loving it. Suddenly I get a mental picture of slaves from the millennia past, toiling to build the pyramids as a symbol of worship for their masters. But the only slaves today are these women, and the monuments of worship are the erect cocks of their owners. It's a tremendous, wonderful notion. In the girl's eyes, I can see a degree of lust mixed with timidity that I would have never hoped to see before the event. Such a blend of desire and meekness may have never existed before, at least not in such a perfect combination. Certainly not for a gross man like Bogart, who probably struggled to score with women even in his heyday. The semen is still slowly beating at the edge of her chin, threatening to drip onto the floor. I know how her master will react if it drips, so I say nothing. I'm hoping for a show. Even the knowledge that the spunk originated from a disgusting pig like Bogart can't ruin this sight. The image of this woman's cum-glazed face still makes my dick twitch. When I get back to the hotel, Maya and Barbara are going to get it, so hard, in every single hole. Bogart looks at me, almost bashfully, but I can see in his face that he still wants to be treated as a superior.
I'm sorry you had to see this, Owens. As I said earlier, most people knock. I would have normally given this slut a chance to clean up beforehand. But now that we have all our cards on the table, we can speak candidly.
The woman has finally finished tucking her breasts away. Although her blouse is so tight, her breasts seem eager to burst free again at any moment, when Bogart finally notices the semen.
For fuck's sake! Clean that shit off your face and get the fuck out of here!
She smiles timidly as she wipes the majority onto her finger before popping it into her mouth. The rest is subsequently dabbed off with a tissue from a conveniently placed box on Bogart's desk. She accomplishes this with sultry, calculated movements. Not calculated by her, I remind myself. Calculated for her beforehand, by the excellent training she's received, from the payload. She walks towards the closed door with shallow, demure steps, but then she strides out of the office boldly. Just before she leaves the room, her entire demeanor changes. She seems to transform from a simpering slut into a dedicated, trained FBI agent, who is only temporarily working as a secretary. The change is as flawless as it is impressive. Bogart has trained her well. With help, of course. Appearances must be upheld in the workplace. He turns back to me. His face is serious and professional, as if I did not just watch his college slut climb out from under his desk with jizz on her chin. I have to work hard to stifle a chuckle.
So what do you imagine Agent Evans thinks of the payload, Mr. Owens?
I scratch my chin and respond.
I don't think he would like it much, sir. We've been apart for a long time, but everything I've seen from him leads me to believe he would generally disapprove.
Bogart nods.
What brings you to that conclusion?
Shrugging, I answer as honestly as I know how.
He doesn't care about pussy, sir.
As soon as the words leave my mouth, I feel the immediate need to reiterate.
I'm not saying he's gay. He used to talk to me about his wife, Rachel, and he seems to genuinely be infatuated with her.
A total simp. The look I receive is one of incredulity.
I've seen his wife, Owens.
She's no bombshell.
A little bit of a porker, if you asked me. he laughed scornfully. I chuckle politely as well, but I am more amused by Bogart's hypocrisy than anything else. I guess she's put on weight, sir. She was pretty hot when I met her. I'd say she used to be an 8.5 or a 9. He was in the academy when the two first got married. Tom used to get seriously, seriously excited when he would tell me about the sex they had together. You know, normal guy talk. So I don't think he's gay, but he never once had eyes for another woman. Bogart drums his fingers on his desk, nodding as if I'm presenting him with a conclusion he had already reached on his own. He was just missing the final puzzle piece. His eyes are closed, as if he's lost in thought. How close are you to Evans, Jim? He's already using my first name. I feel like this will be a good boss to work for. Not very. We're still friends online, I believe, but we haven't spoken in years. A folder is slid across the desk to me. Take a look at this. It's a complaint report filed by Evans. Actually, it's several reports. I skim through the files briskly, and my eyes grow wide. Tom filed official grievances trying to ban collared women at work. I can't believe my eyes. Evans was never a player, but he used to be a decent wingman. Why would he try to hamstring the rest of us, just because he isn't interested? He did indeed. Bogart's voice is thick with disgust. He took it as high as the deputy director. Why would he do that? My voice is full of anger and betrayal. I can't imagine why Tom would want to fuck over all his brothers at the agency. Having collared women at work to boss around is an absolute dream. What kind of man would want to ruin that? It's all in the report. He says that since it is our job to end the payload, having collared women on site could be a security risk. I can feel my blood boiling. It's only a security risk if the women are working cases. Since they've all been demoted to secretarial duties, it should be fine. I agree. But Evans insists that trying to end the payload and having programmed women at our disposal is a conflict of interests. Wait, so you're saying that Tom is really trying to shut down the payload? Everyone else is trying to crack it and understand it better, even the guys who don't care for it. But I didn't think any guys were stupid enough to actually want to shut it down. Bogart nods again, a somber frown plastered on his face. That fucking snake, I declare aloud. Just because he's satisfied with the dried-up cunt he has at home, he wants to prevent the rest of us from enjoying ourselves? He wants to let women rise back up to a station in society that they never should have held in the first place? I look up at Bogart to find a wicked smile spread across his face. If you are as incensed as you seem, then perhaps you'd be okay doing a little side job for me, off the record, of course. I'll do whatever you need, I reply. I can feel the honest anger dripping from my words. 3. The wife. Rachel, a wiry, masculine hand extends towards me, appearing suddenly from the darkness. I can feel fear rising, threatening to spill over into panic. I try to turn, but my movements feel sluggish, as if my body is submerged. The hand moves fast, so incredibly fast. I know that my only prayer is to keep it from my neck. My throat is so vulnerable. It feels so exposed. I wish there was something, anything, to keep that hand from strangling me. The darkness seems to grow as the hand moves. I can never see the form that the hand belongs to. Only the hand itself is visible, and this is both a relief and a horror. I cannot see, but I am seen. This realization terrifies me, and yet somehow it is thrilling. Why? The darkness thankfully hides the glaring eyes of my attacker, but I know that I am fully illuminated. I am exposed. I can feel invisible eyes leering at me through the pitch black. They pierce through me with overwhelming judgment. Somehow I am sure that they can see every flaw and insecurity within my being, of which there are so many. My physical female shape suddenly seems so drab and unappealing. Every ounce of fat on my frame adds to my shamefulness. I know that I have gained weight recently, but my body has never before seemed so ugly. So embarrassing. Voices fill my ears, informing me of how gross and disgusting I am. I look down at my torso. The pudge that I have developed over the past few years is there, but suddenly I can see it as the men in my life must truly see it, repulsive. Vile mounds of cellulite hanging from my frame like leeches. It is sucking away at my youthful beauty. My husband says he loves me no matter what. I try to scream, but the words are captured and dragged back into my lungs. Lies. The voices growl, merging into a single, deafening shout. It is the sound of every male authority figure throughout my entire life. No man would ever desire you. Fat. Haughty. Disgusting. Unsubmissive. Worthless. Garbage. Tears stream from my face. Weak. Pathetic. Unworthy. The masculine claw has almost reached me now. It clenches repeatedly, aiming for my neck. I turn away, laborious and slow, but I barely manage to hide my vulnerable jugular from the hand's overwhelming power. Turning my back on the hand causes terror to grip my intestines, but I know what will happen if it grasps my windpipe. I feel a sudden, violent snatch at my scalp as the hand weaves itself into my messy brown hair, cinching tightly. I can feel a splash of pain as the grip tightens, snatching my head backwards. The words continue to resonate in my ears. Irrelevant. Vile. Meaningless. Loud. Irreverent. Scum. This is a dream. I know that this is a dream, but in dreams you aren't supposed to feel pain, but I do. I can feel the fingers ripping at my hair. I want to pinch myself to wake up, but my hands won't obey. Pinching, a thousand hands suddenly coalesce from nothing, and begin pawing at me. My clothes are shredded, and the hands all descend upon my body. Gripping, pulling, pinching. The pain emerges, but it is twinged with a euphoric edge that my mind cannot fathom. I gaze down upon my body, but now it is bloated, a gelatinous mess. I try to shut out the sight, but my eyes cannot close. My breasts are bare, and my legs are pulled apart. The unkempt hair of my sex seems so shameful when exposed like this. I writhe and shake, but the hands grip me with unyielding force. "Look at your filthy, grotesque body, Rachel!" The voice is screaming, demanding with the utmost authority. My head is shoved forward, and I am forced to see. This is what men see when they look upon your repulsive form. The body below me is not mine, yet it undeniably is, my mind insists. This repellent form is my true self. It must be. The voices insist it is so. "We will make you better. We will make you worthy. Your value comes from us, so we will shape you into something worthy of being seen." A hand grips the hair of my sex and prepares to pull. I expect pain, and I receive it, but in the moment I can feel my cunt gushing with sexual arousal. The other hands grip at every inch of fat on my body. They pull and push. I can feel the fingers digging deep into my flesh. The fat is removed in an instant with only the slightest sting following its departure. When the hands return, they begin caressing and massaging my breasts, my waist, my thighs, my feet, my face. I can feel every inch of my body being stimulated by the countless digits. Fingers dance across my outer labia. I am silently begging them to drive into my pussy, but they merely tease. Hands grab each of my feet and begin rubbing the most delicate areas across the soles. Their motions are perfect, sensual movements, and I splay my toes apart, yearning for them to dig deeper. The combined touch of all these phantasms sends heavenly sensations across the surface of my skin. The independent woman within me wants to reject their unrequested advances, but the pleasure rippling through my body is too great. I love this. I know I shouldn't, but I do. "Look at your body now!" Unseen voices suddenly command. Gazing down, I gasp at my incredible, flawless beauty. My breasts are perky, my waistline is slim and sublime, and my pussy is perfectly smooth. I have never been this beautiful since the day I was born. The voices yet again insist that this is true. "This is what we want!" The voices all chant in unison. "This is what you could be. This is what we will make you." The first hand grips my windpipe, and it squeezes. I can feel an orgasmic pleasure rising from below. The hand now has an arm, a shoulder, a torso, and a face. My husband stares down at me. He seems larger than life, and I cannot meet his powerful, authoritative gaze. Thomas is naked as well. He exudes raw masculinity. He is perfect. Even with my flawless, feminine beauty, I am not his equal. What I see is not a form manufactured by a dream. This is his true, flawless self. Only now, for the first time, I am seeing it clearly. How could I have been so blind? I look at his turgid phallus, and arousal floods my womanhood. I have never been so attracted to him. His cock is so perfect in every way. I long to shower it with humble, demure kisses. Never before in my life have I wanted him to violate me with his divine rod so badly. It is like a king's scepter, his symbol of absolute command. "Thomas!" I keen. I want his grip to tighten, so I can know that he truly wants me. That he truly desires to own me. If he squeezes only a tiny bit tighter, I know that I will climax, and the desire is driving me mad.
"I would want you," he mutters dolefully, "if you weren't so disgusting."
His grip loosens, and looking back at my body once more, I see the bloated, repulsive form again. My true form. The one men must see. I can feel myself plummeting into darkness. Thomas's face watches me as I fall, but then he turns away scornfully. I try to scream his name, before silence engulfs me. I jerk awake, struggling to grasp my location. Beside me, Thomas grunts and rolls over, fluffing his pillow. My breath is ragged, and I am drenched in sweat. I feel more tired than ever. My cunt is aching with unfulfilled sensations. I was so close. So damn close. Glancing at the clock, I see 12:31 displayed in glowing red letters. I must have gone to bed at 8 o'clock, but my vivid dreams have prevented any real rest. I rub my eyes and huff in frustration. I feel Thomas's hand drowsily caress my thigh. He's still half asleep. I don't remember him coming to bed. He must have stayed up late with work again. Looking down, I see my body. It is not thin, but it is a far cry from the monstrosity which I became in my dream. Even still, I can hear my mind insisting that I am indeed the monster from my visions, and what I see now is only an illusion I've created to cope with the horror.
"Bullshit!"
I snarl.
"It's just the payload's bullshit."
The room feels stuffy and humid, but the moisture in my panties has a more embarrassing point of origin. Again Thomas stirs.
"You had another nightmare, sweetheart?"
"Shh, go back to sleep." He wraps his arm around me, and dozes off again. Still I cannot shake the feeling that his words are lies, polite lies, to hide the truth from me. I am the monster. Pulling away from him, I climb out of bed. I walk downstairs to the kitchen. Snatching the refrigerator open, I grab a leftover cupcake.
Fuck the payload. Fuck the patriarchy. And fuck Thomas and his lies. They want me to have a perfect body? I'll fucking show them.
I bite into the sweet cupcake aggressively, but it tastes unappealing in my mouth. I stand motionless for a long time, before I notice the tears that are spilling from my eyes. I force myself to finish the food, just the same. As I walk back towards the bedroom, I suddenly notice how cold my neck is. My hands move up reflexively and touch my throat, as something in my mind reminds me how much warmer it would be with a collar.
4. The slave.
Barbara, my body is motionless and bathed in shadow. I already know that it is completely dark in my enclosure, but the silk material covering my eyes would leave me blind regardless. Just on the other side of the door, I can hear Maya hum as she dusts the hotel room. Doubtlessly, she's wearing her skimpy maid's uniform, the one that Sir prefers. I'm glad. Sir demands that each of us handle our responsibilities dutifully, and the fact that Maya is performing her job to the best of her abilities is both right and proper. I'm glad for her. When Sir returns home in a few hours, he will need her to have all of her holds prepared for usage, but he will also want her to have the hotel room cleaned spick and span. I'm glad for myself as well. This tiny coat closet is more space than I could ever need, and the fact that there is no room to sit or lie down only improves the enclosure in my estimation. A long time ago, in what seems like a different life, I was horribly claustrophobic, and the idea of being blindfolded, gagged, and bound in an enclosure like this would have driven me insane, especially after being in here for 12 or so hours. I didn't understand then, as I do now, that Sir prefers me in here. Now I know better. He didn't put me in here for no reason. This is punishment. Sometimes when stupid girls clean, they break things. And those stupid girls invariably belong bound, naked, and gagged in the closet. I can feel my nude body shivering. It's uncomfortably cold in here. The only clothing I still have is the collar around my neck. I am so grateful that Sir let me keep it on. It provides more than just warmth. It offers me security, personal value, and relief. I cannot imagine the horror of losing it. Still, I try to rub my thighs together for warmth. Of course, this is largely ineffective, since I have a limited range of motion, with my hands bound tightly behind my back. I can tell that my nipples are incredibly erect at the moment, and I wish desperately that Sir was here to warm them with his mouth. I curse my rapacious mind for having such selfish thoughts. If Sir wanted to warm me, he would have done it already. Only a haughty, self-centered bitch like me would want to have something that Sir didn't want her to have. I smile. I deserve the closet. The space is incredibly cramped, and its scent is musky and used. There's an old coat in here that smells like it used to belong to a sweaty hobo. It reeks, and its overwhelming stench only adds to my punishment. This hotel's cleaning lady should be ashamed of herself, for leaving such a disgusting article of clothing for new guests. She must be a stupid girl, and she definitely deserves some time in the closet. Not as much as me, of course. I deserve punishment the most. A dark portion of my mind concurs with all these notions, and it sends waves of mild pleasure flooding outward from my womanhood to the rest of my body. I shiver, both in enjoyment and because of the cold. Shifting my back, I try to relieve some of the pressure that is forming in my frame. My body feels stiff and sore, and I don't want this to get worse. It isn't that I want to remove my discomfort. I know that. I deserve every ounce of misery that I get. After all, when stupid girls break things, they earn this punishment. And I am a stupid girl. This pain is what I need in order to better myself. That just makes sense. However, when Sir arrives home, he might choose one of my holes to relieve himself inside. If he does, then I need to be as limber as possible to properly serve him. He wants every orifice of my body ready to serve his shaft at a moment's notice, and it's best to do that with a body that isn't stiff. I smile broadly at my own cleverness. I am a stupid girl, true, but at times I can figure out some simple things. Especially when Sir has pointed the answer out to me beforehand once or twice. Somewhere, deep within the recesses of my mind, I think I hear a voice whispering to me that this is all wrong. No human deserves to be blindfolded and bound, stuffed naked into a closet like a worthless object. I can feel moisture forming on the inside of my blindfold, but I refuse to consider where its point of origin is. No! I exclaim aloud, but the sound is mostly muffled by my gag. Sir treats me exactly how I deserve. I love being mistreated because I am a worthless slut. And worthless sluts deserve to be mistreated this way. I love getting what I deserve. It is just and right. Even through my muted sobs, I smile again at my clever logic. Shut up in there, bitch! Maya barks at me through the door. Sir has given me permission to come in there and fuck you up if you misbehave, or even if I just want to. If I hear one more peep out of you, I'm gonna rip open that door and whip the piss out of you. Her words are so demeaning. In times past, I know that she never would have spoken to me like this. She used to be the kindest, sweetest stepsister I ever could have imagined. Growing up, she was always mousy and shy. But Sir has transformed her into something stronger. Something better. She has threatened to whip the piss out of me, and I know she means it. The whip is currently hanging on the coat hook near the door. It would only take her a few seconds to grab it, snatch open this broom closet, and really put me in my place. A sick part of my psyche wants her to do just that. It is a disgusting, wormy part of my being, and it truly loves the visceral debasement that Maya is capable of. If she were to start whipping me right now, I'm almost certain I would come immediately. Only stupid girls love the whip, which makes sense, because I love the whip, and I'm a stupid girl. The whip would certainly make me piss, I'm positive of that. Being inside an enclosure with no way of relieving oneself for over 10 hours really takes a toll on the bladder. I've been trying to keep the topic away from my mind, but I have to pee so badly. I don't know how much longer I can hold it. I hear a jingle of keys at the front door. The door creaks open, and I can hear the heavy footsteps of Sir as he enters. "Good evening, sir," Maya says with a sultry, demure tone. "I hope your day went well. How would you prefer to be serviced after a hard day of work? Somehow her voice perfectly balances subservience and fierce sexual cravings. I am jealous. She's exactly what Sir wants from a woman. Her skin is a beautiful olive hue, while mine is a pale, milky white and littered with freckles. The locks of her hair, which are a luscious jet black color, look so stunning and beautiful. By contrast, my ginger hair is entirely inferior. This has been a source of shame for me, all my life. Maya is sexier, smarter, and better in general. I know this, and deep down, I've always known. I'm just a stupid girl. An idiotic, worthless slut. But at least I can take solace in the knowledge that the closet is improving me. Sir grunts. My day was awful. First I saw that my boss has a sexy, black bitch who sucks him off all day. The rest of us have to leave our toys at home, but he gets to enjoy his at the office. How the fuck is that fair? I can hear him shuffling around the room, placing down his briefcase and shedding his overcoat and his service weapon. That gross pig Bogart thinks he's so high and mighty, just because he's got a foxy nigger slut to please him, and he's weaseled his way up the agency's ladder. It pisses me off. His voice is thick with jealousy, and I wish that I could shove that little black chick's face under his boot for him. She should be servicing him, not some other guy. Every woman should serve him. Sir would improve them. Sir would make them better. I hear a subtle, telltale zip. Get to work, bitch, while I finish telling you. He speaks the words so casually, in a voice that a man would use to command a dog. That only makes sense, considering it's better than we deserve. Through the closet door, I can hear soft slurping sounds. Maya is a master of oral pleasure. I wish I had her skills. My mouth begins to water as I imagine Sir's thick venous shaft in my mouth. I wish I was in my sister's place, but I know I haven't earned it. I love to pleasure Sir so much, especially when he decides to take over and show me how it's really done. My gag reflex has been mostly gone for a while now, but I always still gag for him. He loves to hear me choke. I can hear frustration, blended with sexual gratification, in his voice as he continues. Worst of all, I learned today that my old friend Tom Evans is a fucking traitor. He wants to end the payload and give all of you women back your rights. Isn't that the most retarded thing you've ever heard? Through the squelching, gagging sounds, I hear a definitive sound of agreement. In the darkness I nod as well. That is fucking retarded. If women had rights, I might not be in this closet right now. But stupid girls belong in here. I repeat the mantra a few times for good measure. I don't know who this Tom guy is, but he sounds like a real piece of shit. Better than me, obviously, but a piece of shit regardless. I can hear Sir's breath quickening, and I can sense that he's close. I know he's about to blow his load down my sister's throat. I'm so jealous. As soon as Sir finishes, he'll shower, enjoy a bit of alone time, and then go to bed with Maya. That means that I'll definitely be in here all night. It also means I'll definitely piss myself. That will anger Sir immensely, and it will ensure that my stay in here lasts even longer. I relish the idea of receiving my just punishment, but I'd hate to upset Sir further. Stupid girls upset their owners, but it doesn't mean we want to. I can hear Sir moaning with pleasure. That means it's all over. I relegate myself to another night in the closet. I'm gonna piss myself soon, but I'll hold on as long as I can. Wait! Sir exclaims. Where is your sister? There is an audible pop as Maya removes the cock from her mouth. She's in the closet, sir. She and I were cleaning when she knocked your travel mug from the counter and broke the handle. So this morning you and I bound her up and stuffed her into the coat closet. I remember. Sir snaps. Don't tell me things I already know, bitch. Maya's voice drips with humility. I'm so sorry, sir. Do you want to whip me for my insolence? I can hear the ragged lust in her voice. Or I could take her place in the closet. Or I could drag her out, and you could whip us both. Each new suggestion causes more heat to radiate outward from within my cunt. All of her ideas sound so tantalizing. No, no. Just get her out of there. Immediately, I hear Maya's bare feet padding towards my location. The door flies open, and I collapse outward onto the floor. My hands are bound behind my back, so nothing catches my fall, but I am able to rotate and land on my shoulder, narrowly avoiding cracking my head on the linoleum. I hope you didn't enjoy your time in there too much, slut. Sir laughs. You were in there as punishment, after all. What did you learn? Hi, earn DHH, you had chers, dehun HIH, da crushed, sure. I shout out passionately, with the gag muffling my words. Sir laughs scornfully. For fuck's sake. Take the bitch's gag out. My sister peels the gag from my mouth. A stream of drool follows it. She looks so much better with it on. Her smirk is evident in her voice. I agree, but I want to hear her. What did you learn, slut? His voice is so authoritative, my pussy quivers at the sound alone. Even blindfolded, I can feel him staring down at me with so much power, so much strength. It is no wonder I long to serve him. His opinions of me determine my value. I turn towards Sir's general direction, my eyes still blinded by the silk material. I learned that stupid girls belong in the closet, sir. And you don't want the closet, do you? I can sense that he's asking for an honest response. From deep in my mind, the real, terrified, claustrophobic Barbara rears her head and answers. No, sir. Please. The darkness and the constriction were driving me insane. Please. I'll do anything. Just don't put me back. But you're a stupid girl. So you deserve it, right? And you want to receive what you deserve? I nod vigorously, bumping my head against the floor. It's a hell of a paradox, one which I'm too stupid to puzzle out. Well, maybe you'll be less stupid in the future, so you'll deserve less punishment. He speaks again to Maya. Cut her feet loose, roll her over, and prep her ass. Maya goes to work immediately, swiftly freeing my feet and rolling me into a kneeling position. She spreads my thighs open and peels my butt cheeks apart. I can feel my sphincter pucker as it struggles to stay closed. She spits directly onto my asshole, and I can feel it dribbling down towards my sex. I know that the view from above must be erotic. The skin of Maya's warm olive-toned fingers is digging deep into my creamy, white cheeks. I honestly wish I could see it. It isn't proper for her to be doing this, but it is incredibly hot. All of my training and programming assure me of that fact. I have no choice but to agree. Reaching two fingers into my pussy, she coats them with the fluids that have been building all day. She draws her hand back, and I know that the ends of her digits must be completely drenched. I think she loves the closet, sir. Just look how soaked her cunt is. I shudder with shame and excitement, because I know that she is holding her hand up for sir to see, splaying her fingers out to display every drop of my arousal. My, oh my! Sir exclaims. I think you're right. The closet may have to be her new home. I can hear the sinister glee in his voice, and it thrills my disgusting mind. For now though, finish prepping her. Maya obeys wordlessly, driving her fingers into my rectum, and smearing the walls of my anus with my own juices. Her fingers are simply doing their job. They are not intentionally stimulating me, but the knowledge that sir is staring down at me, prepared to enter, floods my body again with enraptured pleasure. Drawing her fingers out of me, she spreads my cheeks again and drives her tongue inside. This does stimulate me sexually, and I release an involuntary moan. I can feel her tongue working, drooling copious amounts of saliva into my hole. I know that in our old lives, when we still considered ourselves people instead of objects, Maya never would have enjoyed deviant behavior like this. I can tell from the eagerness of her ministrations, however, that some sick part of her is loving this, at least as much as I am. Sir allows me to enjoy the gentle probing of my sister's tongue a bit longer than I can feel him push her aside. Now moisten me up, he commands. Once again, I hear the telltale sounds of slurping and spitting. My face is still pressed tightly to the floor, with my rear presented for inspection and insertion. My red hair is spread out wildly across the linoleum, and again I wish it looked as lovely as Maya's. But it is only the drab red hair of a stupid girl. I can feel that my womanhood is gushing, as my natural biology begs to be mounted and impregnated. I also know that this isn't about what my stupid, greedy body wants. This is about servicing the only human being in the room. Sir deserves all the pleasure and affection, and he's the one who will receive it. After a few moments, Maya's sucking sounds die out, and I feel the firm, hot head of sir's cock press firmly against my sphincter. I can feel it twitching. Waiting for him to claim me once again is so invigorating. I'm dying for him, but he refuses to push forward. Time seems to stretch out forever, and I wonder what is the matter. Have I fucked up again? Have I done something to upset him, and now he doesn't want me? I rack my mind, considering what on earth I might have done wrong. I am a stupid, stupid girl, so I know that thinking will probably get me nowhere. Still, I have to try. I rack my mind, seeking my error. Perhaps I'm too dumb? Too fat? Too ugly? Every one of my brain cells is working overtime. It could be a million different things. I long to ask him, but I know he doesn't want to hear my voice. After 1,000 lifetimes have passed, he finally speaks. All right then. Get on with it. Fuck me with your ass. I immediately lurch backwards. I don't have the use of my hands, so I use my leg muscles to drive myself onto him. I can feel the meaty girth of his member as I spear it deep inside me. I let out an unrequested moan of satisfaction. A stinging pain ripples up my spine. My asshole is tight, and even after all this time, I've never been able to accustom myself to sir's girth. But the feeling is amazing, nonetheless. The sensations flooding my anus are not, in themselves, what please me. I never liked anal before sir claimed me, and this has never really changed. But what has changed is my knowledge of what proper service means. I know that sir is enjoying himself, and his pleasure reverberates within me, somehow. The side of my cheek is still smushed against the linoleum, and without my arms to support myself, I am sliding it back and forth across the hotel floor. I know it must make a ridiculous sight, but right now maintaining a steady rhythm on this cock is far more important than the discomfort in my face. There is an audible smack 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 sound echoing off the walls each time his sack strikes against my dripping pussy. The sensation feels amazing, far better than the cock roughly splitting my rectum, but it's the fact that I'm degrading myself so willingly that causes my mind to interpret this intercourse as amazing, white-hot sex. Don't just stand there like a retard, get in here and help her finish me off. Sir barks at Maya in annoyance. I hear her wordlessly collapse to the floor. She must be sliding her head between his legs, because I can feel her silky, black hair drag across my pubic bone each time I slam backwards against sir's crotch. I hear a quiet lapping sound, and I realize that she must be tonguing his ball sack. Good. That's what he likes. Maya's soft, luscious hair drags across my pussy each time I thrust rearward, tantalizing me even further. The enrapturing sensations are flooding my entire being. She and I are servicing our master together, that is where my true pleasure is derived. Below my prostrate body, I can feel my breasts smashed against the floor. They are rubbing sensually against the ground, and the stimulation is making my nipples as hard as ever. I wish sir could see them right now. Would they excite him further? I want to feel his strong hands gripping tightly into my soft flesh. Damn it. This is about what he wants. Not what I want. Why can't I learn? When he finally pumps his seed deep within me, I hope it finally fucks some sense into me. It's the only way I can improve, besides the closet. I feel Sir's cock swelling within me, and I know he's right on the edge. I pick up my pace, moving even faster than before. The discomfort in my asshole increases, and I can feel the friction on my face from the constant rhythmic dragging across the floor. I hardly notice, though. My sphincter is gripping his shaft like a fleshy vice, and I know that his cock must be in heaven. The thought alone is almost enough to make me squirt.
Oh fuck! I'm about to bust! Sir grunts with a heavy voice. Come when I do!
He is speaking to both of us, and his word is irrefutable law. I know in my soul that if this unbearable pleasure and pain were to continue for another year, I would never be able to climax without his permission. He lets out a guttural groan of triumph, and snatches me backwards onto his entire length. The moment I feel the first shot of ropa semen splash against the walls of my anal cavity, I scream out in ecstasy. A violent orgasm rocks my whole body, not from the pleasure of the sex, but from the satisfaction that Sir's fluids have stained my insides once again. He has claimed me sexually, and the pleasure is more intense than the most passionate lovemaking I could have imagined when I was free. The amazing sensations are pushing me past the edge, and I've lost all ability to control my body. I feel a warm jet of my cum squirt out. It is a biological declaration that I've fully surrendered myself to my master. I cannot hold back the flood anymore, and I feel my bladder constrict. All of the piss that I've been holding all day gushes out, streaming over the three of us. Beneath me, I can feel the urine splashing against Maya's face. She is clearly already climaxing as well, and this sudden humiliating shower only drives her to further rapture. Her body shakes as the overwhelming euphoria careens through her entire nervous system. I know exactly how she's feeling, because I've been in her position before. It is so disgusting, so demeaning, so fucking hot. I can hear the primal, agonized ecstasy in her pleasured cries, even though they are muffled by the flexing testicles filling her mouth. Her master has issued her a command to orgasm, and her body is powerless to resist. Not that she would want to resist, of course, she's a good girl. Sir continues pumping a deluge of semen inside me, and I can feel his cock flex powerfully each time he shoots more. His body shudders, and again I orgasm, squirting the last of the urine from my physically exhausted body. I know he is satisfied, and that knowledge is the only reward I need in life. If he stuffs me back in the closet again, I will be fine, just as long as I know he is pleased with me. It is literally all I care about. As his orgasm slowly ebbs, I can feel him begin to soften within me. He pulls his cock free, and a stream of spunk follows. It flows from my ass and over my outer labia, slowly dripping down, presumably coating Maya's piss-soaked face. I hope it lands directly into her eyes. Sir would love that.
Good job, ladies. Sir says, and the approval in his voice threatens to make me come yet again. We are only here to please you, sir.
Maya coos, in between kisses.
Well, you did, except...
My heart sinks. Sir pauses for a moment, and I'm terrified of what his next words will be. We did something wrong. Surely I did something wrong. Stupid girls always mess things up, and I know who the stupidest girl here is.
Barbara, you pissed all over the floor.
I mean that's kinda hot, but it's a huge mess.
I can hear Maya's soft smooches still landing across Sir's skin.
Should I get the whip, sir?
She asks, demurely.
You probably should. She deserves it.
But maybe I'll be lenient this time.
Instantly my mind is torn in two. Now I know that I deserve the whip, so I want it. But he won't give it to me. I can't even receive my just punishment. I hate the pain of the strikes, but I love to be humiliated and improved. Sir said that I need the whip, but he doesn't want me to have it. So I know that I shouldn't want it anymore, but I still do. Simultaneously, I both love it and despise it. And ultimately I deserve it. Without punishment, how can I learn? My brain is short-circuiting, unable to even accomplish the tiny task of deciding what I want. I just wish that Sir would explain to me what my actual desires are.
No whip for now. Sir stands to his feet. But you're not getting out of this piss puddle tonight. Maya and I will shower and go to bed, and in the morning you can clean it up. You'll have all day tomorrow in the closet to think about what you've done.
The closet again. My mind rejoices, but deep within me, a tiny voice keens in fear.
As ex before I shower, clean me off, Barb. I don't want to drip cum and piss all the way to the bathroom. I am still blindfolded, but Maya helpfully guides my mouth to Sir's flaccid cock. I lick at it submissively, tasting the strange blend of urine, semen, and my own detritus. The smell and taste are tangy, sour, and salty all at once. It's absolutely disgusting, but I relish every second. I know that I am making Sir happy, and that's the best a stupid girl like me can hope for. I gently lick and kiss all of the liquids, hoping I don't miss a drop. As I tend to his manhood and clean it, I can feel it stiffening again. I slip the entire length into my mouth, and I savor the moment that it enters my throat. His glands are still quite sensitive, and I can feel him pet my head in a rare, approving gesture. As if jealous, Maya snatches my hair, pulling the cock from between my lips and forcing me to clean other places on his crotch. Maya and I both know that Sir will probably fuck her again tonight before falling asleep. She doesn't want to risk me stealing all his cum. Sir does not seem to mind. He likes for us to fight over his affection, it's only proper. He says that a healthy amount of competition will keep us constantly striving to improve. If not,
he can always just punish us. We'll gladly accept either. Maya guides my head around, ensuring that I get everything before I feel the cock pulled away from me. I then feel my head being snatched around, and my mouth is pressed tightly against Maya's face. I was right, the semen had indeed landed on her cheeks, and even on her eyelids. I try to kiss and lick the fluids off of her as well. Her skin is sticky, and it tastes awful. I make my way to her lips, and I kiss the semen that remains there, drawing it into my mouth. In the moment, however, she kisses me back. I know that it's only a show for sir, but the gentle lips on my face remind me of our shared past. When we were younger, Maya would often give me platonic, sisterly smooches on my cheeks, and feeling these kisses now awakens a part of my soul that I thought had died. The two of us were an inseparable pair, from the moment that we met. Of course, that was back before we learned that we were only sex objects. What a pointless, stupid time in our lives. I feel tears forming again. A selfish, weak part of me wants my stepsister back. I want her to love me again, like we did as children. I feel a shove, as Maya pushes me back down into my puddle. Again, I collapse to the floor, unable to catch my fall. If she gets out of there tonight, I can whip her, right? I can hear the excitement in her voice. Of course, sir says, and I hear them walking towards the bathroom. He says something I can't hear, and Maya laughs. The soft sound of passionate kissing reaches my ears. I relax my head, lowering it into the pee that has pooled below me. It's warm for now, but it will cool over time. That will really make me miserable. Good. I wonder if any woman in history has ever been as lucky as me before. 5. The punishment. Abigail, I arrive at the office 3 hours before work, as instructed. As I pull into the parking garage, I notice how dead this place is. Exiting my car, I move swiftly into the main building. My badge gets me through the door, but all of the interior lights are still off. Only the dim glow of the exit signs illuminate the dark hallways. Earlier this morning, Dearest told me to meet him at Chief Bogart's office. I don't know why I am here, but I trust that Dearest has my best interests at heart. He is such a strong, masculine leader. I'd be so lost without him. He has instructed me to wear a form-fitting pantsuit, but no panties or bra, as usual. I can feel the soft fabric of my bottoms riding up my cracks, but I resist the urge to adjust them. Dearest likes when my body is properly displayed. Walking down these narrow halls, I ponder how much my life has changed in the last few months. I used to be an active federal agent. It's amazing how I was able to squeak by for so many years without someone realizing that I didn't belong. I had taken part in the arrests of over 100 criminals, but I shudder to think about how many more arrests would have been made if a man had held my position. Fortunately, all of that is taken care of now. I am working a secretarial job, and the men are free to solve cases more efficiently, without an emotional, error-prone woman hampering their efforts. Something within my domesticated mind thrums lightly, sending reassuring endorphins eking out into my brain, and rewarding me for my wise thoughts. I feel mild pleasure ripple outward from my nether regions, and my eyes flutter with sexual gratification. It suddenly strikes me as quite strange that I understand how my brain is behaving and why. I must have learned about this process at some point, but if so, I have long since forgotten. That's fine. Dearest always tells me that I think too much for a woman anyway. Riding the elevator up, I pass the 6th floor, where Thomas Evans has been conducting operations to stop something. I forget what. Dearest says it isn't important. But it's a bad thing Tom's doing. Of course, I know that. A little over a week ago, I failed at my one opportunity to make Thomas stop his efforts. It was my job to take him to lunch, learn about the case, and convince him that it was a waste of time. The plan was to suck and fuck him until he realized how amazing the new order is. But he rejected me. The mere thought of it makes me hang my head in shame. One simple job, and I fucked it up. Of course I did. I'm a woman, and women are always fucking things up, as Dearest enjoys reminding me. Out of all the things I could have failed on, this one seems so simple though. My biology has flawlessly shaped every curve of my body to attract a man, to draw him into interest in my holes, and I couldn't even do that. Normally, I've found that humiliation thrills me somehow, and it pleases my entire body. From my brain to my eager womanhood. This brand of humiliation is the bad kind, however. To fail at sex. What purpose does my life even have, if I can't successfully offer my holes to a man? None, that's what. Thankfully, Dearest was there later that night to reprimand me and give my body all the humiliation I could ever dream of. I was able to please him in that regard, so at least I succeeded at something. As I near the office, I can hear two male voices arguing. One is the voice of my Dearest, and the other belongs to Bogart. Even in my current, subservient state, I know that Bogart is awful. He has always been a disgusting, fat pig. His misogynistic behavior used to bother me too, but now I realize how right he was. That doesn't stop him from being gross though, and Dearest has been sure to remind me of what a foul, repulsive man he is. On the societal ladder, he does technically hold a rung higher than me. But he is at the bottom of all the males. No matter what job he holds in the bureau. Before I was safely collared by Dearest, I was terrified that Bogart would try to collar me first. He has always been such a slimy weasel. He treats women like objects, which makes sense, now that I think about it. Because we are, but he, well honestly, most of the same things I hated about him, I also hated about Dearest, before I learned to love them. As I ponder the reasons why I despise Bogart, I struggle to populate the list. Of course, I always hated the way that he let his body go.
Dearest hates that too, understandably. His stringy, balding hair and the sallow color of his flesh are still repulsive. His body is a bloated sack of shit. But all my other reasons seem so silly now. I hated the way he leered at us as we worked. Now I realize that it's only natural. The female body was designed to attract his attention. I used to hate the way he spoke down to all the female agents, but he was just ahead of the curve. I used to object to the fact that he loves to touch our bodies in subtle, seemingly inappropriate ways, but in reality, that makes perfect sense too. How else would he display his desire to breed with us? That is literally our natural purpose. I was a fool for disliking it. Dearest has informed me, however, that Bogart is a slimy, worthless loser. So I'm sure he must be. Still, I'm glad that I now know the real cause to hate him, instead of the petty, juvenile reasons I used to hold. I knock softly on his door, as I was instructed to do. Inside, the arguing ceases, and I hear Dearest call. Come in. Stepping inside, I see the repulsive Bogart seated at his massive desk, and Dearest standing at attention. Miss Abigail! Bogart smiles, sinisterly. I'm so glad you could join us. Gregory, give her the new orders. Dearest's face is red with fury. I don't know what they have been arguing about, but if he asked me to, I'd be willing to dive over that desk and stab Bogart to death. How dare he anger my Dearest? Dearest speaks to me through teeth clenched in rage. Bogart has told me to instruct you. He whips around to face Bogart again. Boss, this is bullshit. I only sent her to Thomas to help with our efforts, you know, to slow him down. This isn't. Shut up! Bogart barks. It was your ham-fisted attempt that made Evans more suspicious than ever. I've had to work double time to cover for your stupidity. Now give Abigail her orders and shut the fuck up. I can see Dearest's fist clench. Again, he turns to me and says, Abigail, for the next month, your salary and servitude will go only to Chief Bogart. My mind snaps. No. No, no, no. I look over to see Bogart grinning as wickedly as ever. This is the last thing I want. I have been glad to serve Dearest in every way. Cleaning his house, warming his bed, taking his seed in every hole he desires, but Bogart? Dearest has spent the last few months ranting about this pig's flaws, and they all come to a polarizing head at once. I'm going to enjoy this so much. For the next month, my secretary, Miss Blair, will teach you exactly how I prefer to be serviced, both at the office and at home. But for now, let's have a little test run, shall we? Bogart grins, his voice dripping with a rapacious fervor. Come over here, bitch. I feel terror and disgust gripping my insides. I want to resist with every fiber of my being, with or without my training. I know that Bogart doesn't deserve me. He doesn't deserve the affection that I give to my Dearest. But my master has commanded me, and I am unable to disobey. I take an uneasy step towards the desk. Stop. Bogart demands. His powerful masculine voice makes my body freeze in place. I feel an electrical charge ripple down my spine towards my sex. He's speaking to me in such a strong, commanding, and demeaning tone. It's just how I like it. On your knees. Crawl to me. Obeying this repulsive man's orders fills me with so much misery, so much humiliation, so much arousal. I see my original master frowning angrily as I slump to the floor. I'm dying for him to stop me, to tell me I can return to him, anything to keep me away from the monster waiting behind the desk. But he is silent. Now crawl, bitch, dot. Bogart snaps, and my body obeys without my approval. And move sexy. I crawl towards him slowly, with my head down and my rear raised, slinking towards him like a cat. Every curve of my feminine form works overtime to ensure that my motions are as sultry as possible. Bogart is a vile, dirty man, but he is a man, and it is my job to please him. Again, I feel a surge of reassuring endorphins as my mind accepts this truth. I am almost to the corner of the desk, when Bogart wheels his chair around the edge. The pleasure emanating from my properly programmed brain has been steadily increasing up to this point. I look up at his seated form, and my misery and disgusting desires spike immediately. He is already naked from the waist down, with his pants pulled around his shoes. His stubby, fat prick is poking out from his unshaven bush like a thick, ugly mushroom. My mind reels with shame and excitement, because I know what I have to do next. I try to scream for Dearest to save me, but the words will not exit my mouth. I hear a furious, scoffing curse from Dearest, and he turns to leave the room. Stay, Gregory. I insist. Bogart shouts. I want you to watch every second. This is your punishment. After all, she's just your lovely whipping girl. He lowers his gaze down to me. Now, young lady, tell your former master exactly how you feel about this. Tell him how the original Abigail feels about it. He rolls his chair close, until his stubby chode of a cock is only inches from my mouth, and he grips the sides of my head in a powerful grasp. The scent wafting up from his groin is musky and repellent. My programming is screaming at me that this is alluring, but the training from Dearest is screaming just as loud in disagreement. No matter which one I listen to, it is only a man's opinion that matters. I have no say in my decisions. The thought fills me with sickening rapture. From deep within my soul, a fallen voice is resurrected. I thought it was gone completely, but it was only waiting for permission to surface. At Bogart's bidding, my tiny, humiliated psyche emerges and calls out in fear. Please, Dearest! Don't let him do this to me! I'm screaming into Bogart's thick penis like a phallic microphone. I don't. I can't. I'll do anything for you. I've served you so faithfully. Don't let him,
MMPH.
Bogart snatches on my ears, and I feel the wide head of his prick entering my face, silencing me. A cataclysmic surge of conflicting emotions racks my entire being. My sense of self is destroyed, once again, and something in my brain begins reforming my self-image into something brand new. Something smaller than before. Something less. He begins jerking on my head aggressively, trying to force his cock into my throat. He isn't nearly long enough to reach that deep, but judging by his efforts, he's determined to try.
You make her call you dearest?
Bogart chortles.
That's adorable. Unfortunately, for the next month the only dearest she's gonna know is the one inside her right now.
His laughter is loud and bawdy. My lips are spread as wide as they've ever been. I've never had a dick this fat inside me before. I can feel an aching in my jaw, but it is dwarfed by the rising ecstasy flooding outward from my cunt. Seeking to perform my duties as well as possible, I gaze up into Bogart's eyes. He is looking down at me with fierce, possessive eyes tinged with lust. His thin lips are drawn up in a gratified smirk. I see him look up at my dearest, gloating, winning, and suddenly I more clearly realize my true place in the world. I am a bargaining chip. A thing to be bought, sold, and traded at the behest of men. The notion that I was something more was nothing but the wild fantasies of an easily confused little girl. At this moment, I am serving a man. I am pleasing a man sexually. These facts give me value. My dearest was wrong. Bogart's stubby little dick gives me just as much pleasure, more pleasure, because it has chosen me and won me. Two men desired me, but now only one has claimed me. How could I ever hope to know my place without this cock being violently crammed into my holes? Bogart's pre-cum oozes into my mouth, and I feel my knowledge increasing. This is the source of female learning. The world fades away, until only the cock, my mouth, and the undeniable waves of pleasure remain. I feel Bogart's hands release me, but I maintain the rapid rhythm. As soon as he blesses my mouth with all of his cum, I will know that his wonderful masculine body has fully accepted my weak feminine one. I drive his cock inside my mouth repeatedly, trying in vain to lodge it in my throat. Bogart lowers his arms down to my blouse and pulls violently. My breasts burst from the shirt, as a shower of buttons land on the office floor. He grips his thick, hairy fingers deep into my soft globes, and another wave of pleasure and desire sweeps across my body. Over the sounds of Bogart's uneasy breathing, I hear my dearest huff in frustration, and I know that he is watching. Part of me wishes that he would take me from behind in a truly humiliating fashion, but this isn't about my greedy desires. This is about my new master and his pleasure. I feel Bogart's cock begin to tighten, and I swirl my tongue around his head seductively. Soon my delicious reward will flood out. I can't wait.
Get off! I want it on your face! Open wide!
I instantly obey, snatching my head back, and opening my mouth as instructed. I hold my tongue out as an ideal target for the priceless liquid.
Tell your dearest how much you love this, bitch!
Tell him, and cream yourself. His voice is so domineering and strong. How could any woman hope to resist such a command?
Oh God!
I scream with my tongue lolling out of my mouth, enraptured pleasure is thick in my voice.
I love this so much. Give me your seed. Please. I need it so much.
The moment that the words exit my lips, a tsunami of intense, humiliating, euphoric sensations explode outward from my body. I experience a violent clitoral orgasm, but also a cerebral one. Every cell within my body feels like it is climaxing simultaneously. My own juices stain the crotch of my pants. I hardly notice, as my body trembles with pleasure. Bogart isn't even touching me. It's unbelievable. Something in my mind is doing all the work, but I have no idea what. Not anymore. Bogart gives his shaft a few rough tugs, and a warm shower of semen jettisons out, hitting my left eye, then my cheek, and then my awaiting mouth. One wild shot flies wide and lands in my blonde hair, instantly oozing down towards my scalp. I lap up the semen that touches my lips, and I smile seductively at my fierce, masculine conqueror. If he tells me to climax again, I know I'll do it immediately. Bogart stares at me in triumph.
Good,
he says, with a post-orgasmic shiver.
The first of many. I hope you saw that, Gregory.
I look over at my former master. His face is an even blend of dejection and rage. Again Bogart speaks.
She's got almost 3 hours before work starts. You can use her until then, I guess, and say your goodbyes. But I want to see her again 15 minutes before 9, and she'd better still have my nut on her face.
His laughter is full of insidious glee.
After that, she's all mine for the next month. Now, both of you, get the fuck out of my office.
6. The request. Thomas the First stare blindly into the bathroom mirror, hardly noticing the rough stubble decorating my face. Breathing a heavy sigh, I contemplate my current situation. I know that I have a critical job to do, but I am beginning to grow tired of the fight. It's exhausting. I almost feel alone. My only lifelines are my family and my new partner at work. I've only been working with the newly transferred agent for a little over a week, but it's so good to have someone I can trust. Rachel had another nightmare last night. She has them almost every time she sleeps, but some are worse than others. Yesterday's seemed particularly awful. In the dream, I rejected her because she has never borne me a son. She has tried describing the dreams to me in detail, but often she can't even remember much about them. She can only recall them in isolated frames. Sometimes the dreams target her body, telling her that being overweight makes her worthless. Sometimes they target her mind, insisting that she's too stupid, irrational, and hormonal to make decisions for herself. Worst of all, sometimes they target the fact that she's been unable to conceive a son, to convince her that she's a failure as a woman in general. But the dreams always supply an answer to their accusations: give in, submit, and hand over your personhood to a man. As soon as you do, all your problems will dissipate. Her dreams sound horrible, and they rob her of any restful sleep. It seems like the payload is using her own insecurities against her. I've tried to point that out, but it's pretty hard to convincingly mansplain to a woman about her own mental anguish. So mostly I just stay silent, or I try to comfort her. What other choice do I have? I wish that I could do something for her, anything, but I know that until I figure out how to shut the entire fucking payload down and reverse its effects, there's no way for me to help. Back in the present, I hear a subtle knock at the bathroom door. My thoughts crash around me, and I realize I've been wasting the precious time I have left before the daily struggle begins. I start to shave rapidly, and I mumble, "Come in." The door creaks open, and a tiny foot steps inside. It's my daughter, Rosemary. Little Aro Aro. She's my entire world. "Daddy," she asks softly, "can I task you a question?" Her voice is so innocent, yet it seems full of worry. She mispronounces some of her words. It's an issue she's been working on daily with her mother. "Of course, pumpkin. What's up?" I try to sound cheery, even though I can hear trepidation in her tone. I'm afraid of what she is going to say. "What does subjugation mean?" My eyes shoot wide open. "What who?" Sweetie, where did you hear that word? I kneel down to her level, trying to disguise the nervousness in my own voice. She can sense my concern, although she does not fully understand it. I see tears beginning to form at the edges of her eyes. "Mama took me to Ta's store to get groceries. A man we saw talked to Mama. He was really scary and he said tat word subjugation dot." I try desperately to hide the worry from my face as I speak. "Aro Aro, you said he was scary. Do you mean he stared a lot? Or do you mean scary?" She looks confused and frightened. Finally, she finds her tongue. "Both." I let out a pent-up breath and wrap my arms around my daughter. "Don't worry about that man, Aro Aro. He can't hurt you or your mama." I feel sorrow welling up behind my tear ducts. This is the reason I have to stop the payload. The future of my own child depends on it. Every bit of my self-pity and exhaustion evaporates as I hold her in my arms. I have never had a more important task than this. In a handful of years, my daughter will become susceptible to the monstrous effects. I can't let that happen. The payload does not affect children. I am grateful for that, at least. As horrendously evil as the payload's creators are, they thought to put a safeguard for underage girls. I imagine they consider themselves fine, upstanding humanitarians. I wish they would all die of syphilis. But my clock is ticking. If I fail in my goal, my daughter and countless other women will fall prey to modern-day slavery. She's safe for now, but in a few years some monster could claim her. Once she's collared, she'll be subject to every thought of that bastard's wicked mind. "Don't say that big word anymore," I admonish her. "It's a grown-up word. A grown-up word like." She lowers her voice to a whisper. "Quap?" She immediately gasps in realization of what she said, placing her hands over her mouth. "I'm Tori, I hug her tighter and nod. "Yes, but don't worry about it, sweet pea. Now you need to go get." I'm interrupted as the door swings open wider, and I see my wife standing in her night coat. The conservative garment makes her look a bit frumpy. Honestly, it makes her look really frumpy. Her brunette hair is a total mess. "Good morning, sweetheart," I say to her, smiling. I try to emote a look of genuine happiness. In all honesty, I am glad to see her, no matter how she appears. Deep in my soul, I focus on how sincerely I love this woman. She stares back at me with eyes puffy from tears. Half my mind whispers to me that she looks pathetic, very little like the healthy, beautiful woman I married. The other half reminds me that this is the woman I married. I feel a twinge of shame for my thoughts. This woman is being bombarded with sinister mental poison that I can't begin to imagine, even in her sleep. I can't expect her to look her best, while simultaneously fighting off a mental virus. The payload is constantly telling her to look good, for my sake, for the sake of every man. She has rebelled by letting herself go. Stress eating has caused her to gain weight, and she refuses to comb her hair or shave her legs. I feel like I'm being punished by the payload for my wife's disobedience. But I haven't complained. It's a small price to pay. I can endure worse than this. I married this woman for her soul after all, not her body. Would I expect her to look her best if she was going through chemotherapy? She's sick, and if putting on some extra weight makes her feel better, then so be it. Once the payload is shut down, we can deal with this, not before. It's more incentive for me, personally, to accomplish my goal. "Aro Aro," she says quietly, kneeling down to our daughter's height. "Go change out of your pajama bottoms and get ready to do your schoolwork. I need to talk to your father, alone." Rosemary nods and hurries down the hallway to her room. Her mother continues gazing at me pleadingly, and I notice that her hand is held conspicuously behind her back. I know what's coming. I try to temper myself for the inevitable argument. As soon as Rosemary is inside her room, my wife steps into the bathroom, closing the door behind her. There is a telltale click from the doorknob. My wife falls to her knees, her head touching the ground in a gesture of supplication. She presents a collar to me. "I consider myself owned," she whispers. I pull her from the floor. Grasping her left hand, I play with the gold band which adorns her fourth finger. I'm pretty sure we already own one another, Rachel. I smile and lean in to kiss her. She recoils from me and tries to bow again. With effort, I hold her still. Tears are flooding her eyes in earnest now.
Thomas, you have to do this. Please. I need it.
I'm so afraid. I tried to fight it, you know that I did. But it's over now.
I've lost.
Collar me now, and then you can free me as soon as you destroy the payload. I pull her close in an embrace, and I pet her hair, trying to calm her.
This is just the payload talking, baby.
I admonish.
You don't need a collar.
In my arms, I can sense her writhing mental torment. I know the payload must be telling her that she needs a harness encircling her throat, and that she should obey me. I am, after all, a man. But I am telling her that she needs no collar. So a paradox is reached. This has happened before, and I know that I can prevail against it. The payload and I both insist that she should listen to me, but we disagree on the collar. That's two votes for me and only one against. It's a crude method of resistance, but so far it has held strong. It should be three votes for me, but Rachel's programming has long ago convinced her that her vote doesn't count. Today, however, she does not calm down as she has before.
It's not enough, Tom.
She sobs.
Yesterday, at the store.
I know. I interrupt her.
Aroaro told me. Some guy hassled you. Started talking about subjugation. Losers like that can't hurt. He didn't just hassle me, Thomas. He tried to collar me. He followed me out to my car and he tried.
Rachel's voice is full of anguish. She sounds like an attempted rape victim struggling to discuss the crime.
He tried to collar me, Tom.
My eyes widen with shock. It is uncommon for married women to be collared by men other than their husbands, but it is not completely unheard of.
And what happened?
Outwardly I attempt to remain calm, but inwardly my stomach feels full of rocks. The mental image of my wife as a slave to another man lodges itself into my brain and refuses to leave. Rachel hangs her head down in shame.
I almost.
Her sobs are so thick now that I have to struggle to hear.
I almost let him.
My stomach had felt full of stones. Now it feels loaded with piranhas, gnawing at my gut with a determined ferocity.
He kept talking about how I needed his protection. How I needed strength and logic to overcome my feminine weaknesses. I told him that I was married, but he said that no proper husband would ever let his wife go uncollared. He said that female subjugation was the natural biological order, and he was the strong male that I should submit to, for security. He said that the world is too dangerous for an unprotected woman. It's dangerous because of Madhurf.
I begin to shout, but then lower my voice when I remember Rosemary is nearby.
It's dangerous because of motherfuckers like him. What kind of ass-backwards logic?
My wife is shaking her head emphatically.
That realization doesn't prevent men like him from being a danger to me. The entire time he spoke, I could feel the payload whispering to me, telling me that he was right. My programming is with me constantly, insisting that I need to serve the strongest man, and the strongest man is the one willing to collar me. The one who wants to protect me. Damn it. I am the one who actually wants to protect you, Rachel.
I hiss, still trying to keep my voice low.
I don't want you to become a slave. Not to me or anyone else. I can be a slave. I don't care.
Rachel's eyes are faucets of grief.
As long as I'm yours, I don't care anymore. Please, Thomas. Please.
My mind is a whirlwind of shifting emotions. I know that I'm probably only hearing the payload speak through her lips, but the thought of another man stealing my wife has shaken me. I insist to myself that it's not a possessive thing. I am not trying to retain Rachel like property. I genuinely love her. But the idea that any random guy could rob me of my spouse, it makes me physically ill.
I agree that something must be done. But I don't think I can collar you. At work, I'm the most outspoken voice against the use of collars. If it got out that I collared my wife.
You're worried about your pride? Rachel asks, entirely on edge. I can see the payload's effects ravaging her psyche. It must be telling her that she should never question a man, but it must also be telling her to continue on whatever course will net her the enslavement that she deserves. She continues to plead with me, her voice somehow simultaneously forceful and meek.
I'm afraid of being stolen from you by a stranger, and you're worried what your coworkers will think. I swear, if Aroaro hadn't started crying in the parking lot and drawing attention to us, I don't know if you and I would even be having this conversation right now. Imagine if I'm stolen away from you. You'll lose your wife and Aroaro will lose her mother.
These last words set my resolve. I can't endure the loss of my wife. Aside from Rosemary, she's the only thing that matters to me in this world. And the very notion that Aroaro could grow up with the knowledge that her mother is a slave to a complete stranger, it's bone-chilling. Still, the thought of me placing a collar around Rachel's neck sickens me to my core, but how can I avoid it? It is a disgusting medicine to swallow, but the sickness that it could prevent is so much worse. Rachel holds out the collar to me with trembling hands, and I receive it just as uneasily. I can tell that the payload is functioning properly, as she kneels before me, preparing to upgrade me from loving husband to supreme, tyrannical overlord. Her wild hair hangs down to the floor, tickling my bare feet. I'm still in my pajamas, but her complete and utter reverence makes me feel so masculine, so powerful. I can hear the voices of my primitive ancestors insisting to me that this is right. She belongs below me, not beside me. All the feminine struggles in the world only sought to overturn the natural balance. In the wild, a male chooses his mate and she submits. Why should humanity behave any differently? Even with her head hung down in supplication, I can sense that she's loving this. She's been suffering, month after month. Part of her has been longing to be in this position with me. Longing to feel me slide the cool leather around her neck. Standing above her, gazing down, I can feel that we are mimicking the exact positions that countless men and women have held for so long now. It is the position that women will continue to hold. My mind reels as if struck. I see the collar in my hands. It is almost in place around my wife's neck, and I want to vomit. And most of it isn't even for Rachel's sake. I love her, but I can feel that my desire for control might overpower that love. It's Rosemary. I can't stand the thought of some slimy man, a man who does not and cannot ever know love for her, wrapping a disgusting piece of leather and steel around her neck, forever removing her autonomy. I have to do something. I have to make a change. I have to be the strong one. Rachel is waiting, completely patient. I can sense her passions growing. Her unnatural desire to be owned is almost palpable. Silently, I wonder how long she will wait on the floor before she asks me to hurry up. From her perfectly still pose, I imagine she might wait forever. I won't make her. Stand up, Rachel. I say. She stands. I expect an argument, but the only audible sound is her ragged breathing, interrupted by occasional soft whimpers. I have an idea, sweetheart. I tell her. Please go get me a pencil and paper. I can sense her hesitation to leave, but her programming insists that she obey. She leaves without a word. When she returns, I place the paper on the toilet seat lid and relock the door. Write a list. Include everything that you don't want to do. I may be your master, but I won't overstep the bounds you set now. It's the only way I'll agree to call you. I can sense in her expression that she's torn. I get a sense that the payload has no idea how to twist this request. A man, her soon-to-be master, has commanded her to write limitations for him. It's another paradox. But again, I win the votes. 2-1. I can't help but smile smugly at my cleverness. I may be taking a slave, but I've forced that slave into maintaining some autonomy. It's perfect. I continue to smile until I see the first item on the list, no BJs. Fuck! I try to stifle the swear, but I cannot control myself. Rachel hears me, and starts to erase it. No! I insist. Leave it. That's the whole fucking point of this list. Just keep writing. I curse again under my breath. That was a dirty blow. Getting head from my wife has always been a struggle. She's always hated every part of it, but she would occasionally relent. Now it is on paper, black and white. Written with a graphite-tipped pencil, it is literally set in stone. How ironic. Obviously, there is no one to hold me to my word except for my own self. Still, I swear that I will stay strong. I will not become a dictator. I carefully read each line as she writes. Tom helps with the house cleaning, that's fair. I already do that, so no change is required. She works from home and tends to our daughter, so I would never balk at such a simple demand. Tom continues doing the cooking. My eye twitches upon reading this. When we first got married, we planned to split the job of cooking, but when we discovered that I enjoy cooking more than she does, it fell to me to become the house's chef, most of the time. Whatever. I don't mind. Tom continues doing the yard work. I frown, as I notice that this list is becoming very chore-oriented. I was expecting a number of human rights she wished to maintain while a slave, but here she is focusing on menial tasks. Oh well, it is her list after all. Who am I to judge? I suppose she just trusts me not to fuck her over? Maybe I should feel honored. Tom doesn't collar other women. Now I am becoming visibly annoyed with my wife. No blowjobs is near the top while. Don't become a monster who enslaves additional humans. Seems like an afterthought. I'm glad that Rachel is looking down at the paper. I know that my frustrations are probably plastered on my face. I consider saying something smug about how the collar is her idea in the first place, but I hold back. I'm angry at the payload. Attacking Rachel won't help that. Tom continues to love and respect me. Finally, she writes something I would have expected from the start. On the priority list, it trails far behind, no blowjobs, and cut the fucking grass. But at least it's on the paper. No anal. I sigh and nod. Anal was almost as rare as getting my dick sucked, so I'm not losing out on much there. She writes one more and hands the paper to me. I quickly read the final item. No quickie sex. Oh hell no, Rachel! That's not fair! I exclaim, almost shouting. She immediately takes the paper back and begins to erase. Wait. Wait. Don't erase it just yet. I say quickly. Let's talk about this one. You aren't always in the mood for sex when I am. If that happens, the least you can do for me is offer a warm hole. That's basically nothing. Right? She nods in total agreement, and quickly erases the words. I don't know if she is legitimately convinced by my argument, or if she is just being subservient. But in the moment, I don't care. A man can only deal with so much. As soon as the list is complete, I write. I will comply with my wife's desires, and I sign it. It's a pointless gesture to sign, because no one will hold me to it. But I feel it's the only proper path. With the paper signed, I wrap my arms around my wife and kiss her passionately. I try to savor the embrace. It's the last time I can kiss my wife, my actual wife, until the payload has been eradicated. I can feel the stiffness in her kiss. Her entire body is trembling, and it makes it hard to enjoy our final embrace. I know that a million thoughts are probably flooding her mind, and at least half of them are tainted by her programming.
Fear, lust, independence, and subservience all battle within her brain. There's hatred in there too, hatred for the payload, and probably even some hatred for men in general. We have become her masters, and what slave doesn't hate their master? At least a little? She immediately kneels again. She utters the mantra that has been repeating again and again inside her mind. I consider myself owned. I slap the collar around her neck. Immediately, I can tell that it's having an incredible, powerful effect over her, but I refuse to acknowledge it. I kiss the top of her head once again, and I step out of the room. Put that paper in a safe place. I admonish. I love you, and I'll see you after work. Once I have blown a kiss to Rosemary, it only takes a few minutes to get dressed and prep all of my work materials. I exit the house. This entire morning has been taxing. I just need this day to be over with. My new partner, James Owens, is waiting for me at the end of the driveway. His dark sunglasses block the early morning sun from his eyes, but beneath them, he flashes a cocky smile. His positivity is infectious. Jim and I go way back, and he's just about the only male I feel I can fully trust anymore. He's the only guy I've met who seems to hate the payload as much as me. As I get into the car, I see Jim pointing back toward my house. Hey, pal, I think somebody needs your attention. As I turn, I see my wife bounding up to me. She is still wearing her house coat, but her hair has been brushed straight. It looks better than it has in a long time. Oh, Tom, sweetheart. She grins at me. You forgot your lunch. Her face is bright and cheerful, and my heart flutters like a schoolboy. Instantly, I remember exactly why I fell in love with her. It's been months since I've seen her look this happy, and it warms my jaded soul. In the back of my mind, I know that the payload has probably caused this change, but the realization can't fully stop me from enjoying her smile. I just love to see my wife happy. Is that such a crime? She is practically beaming as she hands me my lunch bag. Have a good day at work, sweetheart. Below her radiant smile, I see the hideous collar displayed on her neck. It immediately sours the joy I feel, but I instinctively try to cling to the tiny kernel of happiness. Thank you, babe. I say quickly. I bend down to give her a quick peck on the lips. The moment that our mouths touch, I feel an electricity emanating from her that I haven't felt in years. The passion, the desire, the raw sexual fervor within that simple kiss shocks me to my core. It is reminiscent of our first kiss, so full of love and longing. She runs her tongue across the inside of my lips, seductively. I feel my manhood twitch. A soft alarm signals within my brain, but I silence it immediately. This simple smooch is so amazing. It isn't just a pre-payload kiss. It's a wedding day kiss. It's a honeymoon kiss. It's a kiss I would receive after giving her a world-shattering orgasm. I wish every kiss could be so sweet. I absolutely love it. And I love her. I hate to end the embrace, but I remember that Jim is right behind me. I pull away. I'm sorry to end this so abruptly, baby. But I can't be late for work. I understand, Tom. She says with a smile. Give him hell at work, and go fuck up that mean old payload. There is a playfulness in her words that I both adore and mistrust. I will, sugar. I say as I close the car door. She waves at us as we drive away. Well, that was unexpected. Jim is looking at me with a blend of confusion and amusement. Surely he saw her collar. I have some explaining to do. 7. The scheme. James Tom is sitting in my car, right next to me, and I feel both furious and vindicated. I try to hide my emotions. I'm certain that the dark sunglasses are helping. I've always had a decent poker face. It's a must in my line of work, but hiding this sudden flood of emotions is a challenge, even for me. I set my expression to a facade of humor and surprise, but what has happened isn't funny, nor is it particularly surprising. Thomas finally collared his wife. I saw it plain as day when she gave him his lunch. Mr. High and Mighty, the great Thomas Evans, has finally stooped down and claimed his fat-ass wife as property. Up until now, he's had nothing but vitriol for the men who collar women. I wonder how he feels now that he's one of us. I wish I could just kick the shit out of him right now. He's a deplorable, fucking hypocrite. But I suppose that this is for the best. The goal has always been to convince him to give up this pointless crusade against the payload. His decision to collar his wife is just one step on that road. He's staring at me with a sheepish, embarrassed look. He's such a pussy. Finally, he makes the right decision for once. He puts his wife at his feet where she belongs, and the act has wounded him. I hate that I was ever friends with this shithead in the first place. So I guess you saw the, He gestures to his neck. Collar on Rachel. I nod. Yeah, buddy. What's up with that? I try to keep my face blank. I can't give anything away. Yeah, well, that was an unfortunate thing. But it had to be done, I'm afraid. A guy tried to collar Rachel yesterday. Behind my glasses, my eyes widen. No shit? That's unusual. She's clearly married. Most guys wouldn't try a ballsy move like that. Well, someone did. RORO saved the day, apparently. She started crying and scared the guy off when people started looking, I guess. Rachel said that the payload was commanding her so intensely that she almost gave in. Wow. My voice is full of more surprise than I really feel. Of course some guy would try to collar Rachel. She's a bit overweight, but she naturally has a beautiful face. It's nothing that a little forced diet and exercise can't fix. And of course Rachel would want to submit. The payload only encourages the natural order. All female sluts belong on their knees.
It just took a little computer program to remind them of that. I don't blame the guy who tried to catch Rachel either. If she's walking around with a wedding ring and no collar, then clearly her husband must be a little pussy bitch who's too weak to secure his own property. Exhibit A? Thomas. Pussy bitch. Evans. I can't stand to lose her, Jim. She's my world. She and Rosemary are the reason that I'm fighting so hard to stop the payload. If I lost one of them, I don't think I could make it in life. I say nothing. I want to hear all of his thoughts before I make my next move. I know how much we both hate the payload, Jim, but I felt like I was running out of options. Rachel was begging for me to collar her, in order to save her from being stolen away from me. I can tell that he's looking for approval, for acceptance. I won't give it to him. Not yet. If he ever discovers that I actually love the payload, then his trust in me will completely evaporate. That will ruin everything. I continue to stare at him, emotionless. I did come up with a compromise, though, he says, defensively. I got Rachel to make a list of rules highlighting how she wanted me to behave as her master. As long as I keep my word, and treat her like she requests, then I've maintained at least a portion of her autonomy, right? At the moment, I am eternally grateful for these sunglasses. If it weren't for them, Tom would definitely be able to see the disgust in my face. This man is a quivering pussy. A weak-willed, pathetic excuse for a man. If he didn't have a child already, I'd swear he has nothing between his legs. Hell, maybe his daughter isn't even his. I bet Rachel got knocked up by a neighbor, just to feel Ariel Man's touch for once. That wouldn't surprise me. Because Tom is anything but a real man. Hiding my repulsion is one of the hardest things I've ever done. What rules did she give you, buddy? Thomas shrugs. Mostly petty shit, honestly. He chuckles. I was expecting her to add all the human rights that she wanted to maintain, but it was mostly about chores and stuff. I see his countenance fall a bit. And she banned some sex stuff that she's not into, so that sucks. Okay, now I understand. Tom is actually retarded. What kind of fucking idiot would take a gift-wrapped pleasure machine, and then allow half the settings to be turned off? We've already reached the city, and we're getting close to the Bureau's field office. I'll be glad to get out of this car. I need to get away from Tom before his faggotry rubs off on me. I need to brief Bogart on the developments Thomas has made with the case. So far, we've been able to hamstring his efforts without him noticing. Feeding him misleading information and secretly hampering his progress has been like giving Candito a baby. He trusts me completely. Stop the car! Tom shouts suddenly. What the hell? I slow the car rapidly, pulling over to the side. Tom jumps out before the vehicle has even fully stopped, and he moves hurriedly towards a darkened alley. Back me up! He shouts through the open door. Non-consensual collaring in progress! Fuck! I snarl, as soon as he has moved out of earshot. That motherfucking, hypocritical, white knight, is at it again. Nevertheless, I throw the car into park and jog after him. As I round the corner, I see that he has confronted a man and a woman. The woman is on her knees, with tears streaming down her face. I am immediately stricken by the woman's raw, unadulterated beauty. She is a perfect 10. Her hair is a bright, intense blonde, almost white. Bright, silvery blue eyes gaze out tearfully from her flawless, porcelain face. Her figure is the finest I think I have ever seen. The clothes she wears are ill-fitting and dirty, but even they can't hide the perfection beneath. In her face, she looks young, no older than 18 or 19, but she has the vivacious hourglass shape of a full-grown woman. Maya and Barbara are both attractive, Maya especially, but they both look like dogs compared to this lady. She isn't tall, but every inch of her looks as if it was sculpted by the gods. The man, by contrast, is a joke. He's even shorter than she is. He's pudgy, and it looks like his hairline is beginning to recede. Honestly, his face looks like a true anomaly. He seems to have teenage acne on his cheeks, but also graying hairs in his patchy goatee. You poor bastard. Your fugly ass was about to land the most beautiful woman I have ever seen, but you couldn't pull it off. Too bad. The man is glaring at Tom with a look of anger and fear. What he's doing isn't technically illegal, but the woman crying on her knees isn't a good look. Well, technically to me, it is a good look, because I know that catching women is amazing, but of course I'm not allowed to express that sentiment openly. Tom is holding out his badge with his left hand, as his right rests on the grip of his service weapon. I can tell he's trying to proceed cautiously. He doesn't have the legal right to arrest this guy, but the guy may not even know that. Even though I'd love to fuck up Tom's plan, I won't risk blowing my cover, just so this loser can claim a hot piece of ass. Ma'am, excuse me, ma'am. Are you in trouble? Do you know this man? Are you here against your will? Thomas speaks loudly, and his attention darts back and forth between the girl and her attempted catcher. She's with me, and she's not being forced to do anything, officer. Tell them, bitch. Tell them you're my girlfriend. The man's voice sounds a little crazy, bordering on hysteria. What's his problem? The girl's eyes are as wide as saucers, and they are streaming tears. I can see the violent turmoil in her face. She's being ravaged both by fear of this man, and the payload's wonderful power. Her terror is tantalizing, and I can feel my cock stiffen. I'm not. She can't even form coherent sentences. What a pathetic yet erotic display. This woman is clearly not well. Ma'am, would you like to come with us? Thomas's voice is calm and reassuring. His eyes are resting solely on the woman now. Turning my attention back to the man, I notice that he is still gripping the collar tightly in his left fist. I take a step to my right,
so that I can more clearly see what he has in his other hand. As he steps to the side, I see the unmistakable shape of a pistol grip. This fucker has a firearm? What kind of psycho brings a gun to a collaring? The payload does all of the work for you. You don't need a weapon like a traditional rapist. My hand instinctively drops to my sidearm. All of my training tells me to draw it, notify Thomas that the suspect is armed, and demand that he drop his weapon. It takes every ounce of my will to resist that urge. This guy is armed, and he's pissed at Thomas. If something were to happen, and Thomas got shot, he'd be off the case indefinitely. That is exactly what a large portion of my fellow agents want. I don't want Tom to die, not really, but if he was injured, it would make things so much easier. No one else is going to pick up the slack in his case. Bogart has ensured that everyone working this case loves the payload just as much as I do, with one unavoidable exception. Tom. He is the linchpin. If he's removed from the equation, then nobody will be left to carry on his crusade. At least not at our field office. A portion of my mind screams at me that I'm being insane. I'm not actually going to let a fellow agent get shot, just to stop him from working this case. Am I? I can't decide. Drop the gun! Get on the ground! Drop it! Thomas has begun screaming at the man, and he is brandishing his department-issued Glock. I suppose he saw the weapon and made the decision for me. I draw my sidearm as well, and I move forward, repeating the same commands. The man immediately panics and drops the gun, taking off down the alleyway. Tom holsters his weapon and takes off running after him. Secure the weapon and the girl! He calls to me, his voice full of adrenaline. I holster my gun and step closer to the lady. She is still weeping openly. In such close proximity, her beauty astounds me yet again. Her lips are full and soft, and I cannot help but think about how good they would look, wrapped around the head of my cock. She looks up at me, pleadingly. She is seeking security, hoping that I will be the one to protect her. I could give her both security and protection, but it would be on my terms. Not hers. If she was mine, she would sleep beside me every night. Maya and her sister can share that tiny closet for all I care. This woman's raw, undomesticated sexuality are all I can think about. I could perfect this creature. I could teach her to serve men, to serve me, like an impeccable, doting goddess. A goddess who only answers to me, her god. Her lord and master. I reach down to secure the firearm, but when I bring my hand back up, I find it holding the collar instead. She sees the band in my grip, and her tears begin flowing anew. She knows that I have the power in this situation. Her body trembles with an electrifying fear, but she seems unable to move. Deep in her soul, she longs for the collar. She wants to be my slave. She wants to be lowered down to the station at which all women belong. Her feminine mind knows by now that her rightful position is on her knees, face down, ass up. Serving a man is the ideal job for her, and she can be a perfect queen. Ruling above every other woman she meets, and subservient only to the superior sex. The payload has helped to put her in this place, but now that she's there, she must know this is right. Please! She croaks. Just let me go. So she senses my plans. But she is powerless to stop me. The only reason I haven't already placed the collar around her neck is Thomas. If I collar her now, my cover will be blown. Is this one girl worth it? Bogart will be furious, and Thomas will never trust me again. Is this one beautiful, flawless, young slave truly worth it? She is. My mind, my soul, and my cock are all in agreement. As soon as her cunt is wrapped tightly around my shaft, milking it with everything she's got, it will be worth all the necessary repercussions. I reach down, opening the collar just wide enough to slip the girl's delicate neck inside. She whimpers slightly, aware of what's coming but helpless to stop it. I can sense that her mind is screaming out in terror, but her body is motionless, obedient, demure. Fucker got away! A voice from behind me dashes against my ears, and I snatch my hand back, guiltily. He left his car running. I guess he wanted to make a quick getaway. Shit! I can hear Thomas's footsteps approaching from the rear. He is close, but I can tell by the inflections in his voice, he didn't see what I was doing. With my back turned, in between him and the girl, it must have blocked his view. Part of me considers lunging forward and applying the collar anyway. The woman's frightened eyes are the fiercest aphrodisiac, but I swallow hard, taking a step back. I may have to postpone my plans, but this girl isn't safe from me. I'm still going to collar her, I just need a better opportunity. I've got the fucker's collar! I say loudly. I flavor my tone with annoyance, which is easy, considering what I just missed out on. Bastard was planning on an armed collaring. I've never seen anything like that before. What a psychopath. That rat fucker! Thomas hisses. Let me see that thing. Begrudgingly, I hand him the collar. He rolls it around in his hand, gripping it with simmering rage. His eyes narrow. These collars. I can hear the hatred in his voice. These damn collars! Fuck the payload! He turns and hurls the collar down the alley. It collides against a far wall, and falls into a pile of backstreet refuse. It comes to rest on top like a discarded crown. So much power, wasted. The girl is still on her knees, but she has turned her back to us. Thomas gives me a tired smile. Thanks for the assistance, Jim. I wasn't expecting to draw my weapon or rescue a woman today, but I'm glad I had you backing me up. Again, my dark glasses save me, as I roll my eyes in frustration. Saving a woman? From what? From her proper role in society? Part of me wishes that the guy had just shot Tom.
Remembering the firearm, I turned to pick it up off the ground. It was right at my feet. Looking down, I see only concrete.
Tom, did you grab the...
My mind recoils like a snake, and I jerk my body rapidly away from the woman on the ground, placing my hand back on my own pistol. She slowly stands, raising the gun to her own chin, pointing up towards her brain. Tom notices, and immediately steps back as well, holding his palms forward in a pleading gesture.
Whoa, ma'am!
He shouts.
Put the gun down! You're in no danger! Don't do anything crazy!
The woman's eyes are gushing tears, and she lets out a pained cry.
This life isn't worth it! I don't want to be a slave!
She screams out, a million emotions thick in her voice.
Please! Ma'am! We're federal agents tasked with shutting down the payload. You can trust us. You're safe with us. Please! Don't hurt yourself! You can stay free, I swear!
Her eyes fall on me, and narrow with distrust, but they soften as she looks back at Thomas.
You say that, but you or any other man could claim me as property. Women have already lost the right to vote, the right to equality. All I have left is my personal freedom. And I'd rather die than relinquish that. I'd never ask you to submit, ma'am. I want you to live and be free. I hate the payload just as much as you. Please give me a chance to save you. Please. I'm trying to end the payload to save my wife and daughter. But I need more time, please.
I can see the gears turning in her mind. She's an erratic, hormonal woman, but she's clearly hatching a scheme.
What is she planning?
She turns back to me.
You.
She shouts, angrily.
Go get that collar.
I love her idea, but it's been months since any woman has raised her voice to me. Her audacity makes me grit my teeth with rage. Still, I wanted to secure the collar anyway, so I move slowly to retrieve it. When I return, she gestures with her head toward Thomas.
Give the collar to him.
I hold still.
Do it. Or I'll paint this alley with my brains.
I don't trust the ragged tone in her voice, but I slowly hand Thomas the leather band. He touches it with repulsion, reminding me once again how much I hate him.
Now you!
She snaps at Thomas.
Collar me! What the fuck?
Tom and I cry out in unison. What is this crazy bitch planning?
I have to be a slave in this world, but if I am going to live, then I will be a slave to the master of my own choosing. On my terms!
Or I'll die. It's your call.
There has to be another way. I swore to my wife that I'd never collar another woman.
Thomas insists, with unbelievable sincerity. My hatred for him is reaching all new heights. He is refusing to become the master of the sexiest slut on earth.
Do it or you'll be cleaning my brains up with a mop.
I hear the subtle click of the hammer, as she cocks the weapon.
Wait. Wait.
Tom looks mortified. He is torn between two unacceptable options. He's being forced to take control, and he hates it.
Don't hurt yourself.
I'll do it. Just please don't hurt yourself. Tentatively, he reaches out with the collar.
I have never been more envious in my entire life. Ever since I moved here to work this case, I've had two collared women, and Thomas has had none. Somehow, in a single day, we end up with the same number, and he has the hottest bitch out of all of them.
That isn't fucking fair. Slowly, he begins slipping the collar around her throat. For a second, I think he might go for the gun, but she moves it away from him, pressing the barrel against her temple. As soon as the collar is in place, she kneels, dropping the gun to the concrete. Thomas immediately snatches it up. The lady lowers her head to the dirty pavement, and whispers in a worshipful tone. I consider myself owned. I can tell that the payload is going to work, pleasing this woman for her obedience. Normally such an erotic sight would cause my pants to tent, but I'm too fucking mad at the moment.
Thomas inspects the gun, and swears audibly.
He turns to face me. This gun, it's just a stupid, fucking BB gun. We just enslaved this woman to save her from stinging herself with a BB.
He continues to examine the object in his hand. It looks almost completely identical to a lethal firearm.
He glares down at the girl. Did you know this wasn't real? He demands. The girl shakes her head and shrugs. His eyes are still glowing with aggravation, but he gently lifts the woman to her feet. Get into the car with us, ma'am.
Fuck.
I don't know what I'm going to do with you, but for now we can give you a ride home. Do you have a safe place to stay? The girl shakes her head.
Okay, shit. I don't know.
Just ride with us to headquarters, and we'll figure something out. You can make an official statement about your attacker. I can't believe I haven't asked this yet.
What is your name?
Naomi. She says softly. Thomas sighs and rubs his temples. All right, Naomi, let's go. Son of a bitch, my life just keeps getting more complicated.
We exit the alley and climb into my car. Tom and I are both furious for entirely different reasons. Naomi is an empty page, waiting for commands she will never receive. I decide at that moment that I need to figure out how to steal a collared bitch.
8. The camera. Barbara. This closet is truly amazing. I can see that now, so clearly. I look around the cramped interior. I am no longer blindfolded, but even without it, I can hardly see anything. The only light available is what slips in under the door. There is nothing much to see in here anyway, except for the stale old coat, a pair of Sir's shoes on the floor, and a dim red light above my head. The light glows with a constant intensity. It reminds me of an all-seeing eye, from some book I must have read, now long forgotten. The glowing light is not an eye, I know. But right next to it,
there is an eye, hidden by the darkness. It is an eye of glass and metal. A camera, located high above my head, is watching my every move. I cannot see the lens, but Sir has assured me that it can see me, even in the darkness. I gaze up toward the red light and smile, seductively. I run my hands down the length of my naked body, swaying with sultry motions. When my hands return to my breasts, I smush the twins together and bite my bottom lip with desire. I slide a hand down to my sex, and moan again as a finger slips inside. Moistened with my own juices, I gently tease at my clit. Physically, it feels fantastic, of course. But there are sensations originating from my brain that overpower the simple vaginal stimulation. I sway seductively, as my eyes flutter with rapture. I hope Sir is watching right now. He is recording me, all day, but he can switch over to watch the live feed whenever he wants. The mere thought that he might be observing me at this exact moment is what truly thrills me. I want to perform the sexiest, most disgusting, most humiliating displays for Sir to see. But I am running out of ideas. That makes sense, honestly. It has only been about 3 hours, but a stupid girl like me isn't going to be able to keep coming up with alluring ideas by herself. This is why women need men in control so badly. By ourselves, we could never figure out exactly how to properly serve our masters. That's why we need them to tell us. I pinch my nipples and twist. It hurts, and I moan with sick delight. The camera has audio feed, so I want all my sounds to be as arousing as possible. Sir needs pleasure. It is the job of every woman to offer him that. As I ponder my gender's lowly station, I feel a slight twinge of reassuring sensations, but it isn't as intense as it could be. I need more. There is an unexpected rattling at the front door. As soon as it squeaks open, I hear Sir's deep, wonderful voice. Fuck me! It is clearly an obscenity shouted in frustration, not a command, but a desperate part of me hopes it's both. Has Sir been watching me dance and touch myself? Has he been so impressed with my gyrations that he has decided to come down here and use my body? I can't imagine such a wonderful dream coming true. The unmistakable sound of a door slam echoes through the small hotel room. I hear Maya's footfalls as she scurries to the door to meet our master. She wasn't already in place waiting, so she might really catch it for that. Sir doesn't tolerate silly excuses.
Welcome home, sir! How would you like to be serviced?
Maya begins to coo, with shameful submission dripping from her words. She knows she wasn't in her proper position, and she wants to be reprimanded. I can tell.
Fuck, this day is getting worse every second!
Sir interrupts her, shouting in aggravation.
Maya, where the fuck are my case files? They weren't in my briefcase like I expected. You and your sister are always moving my stuff around when you clean, and you end up losing shit. I need them, now! Move!
I hear an audible slap, although whether it's on her face or her ass, I have no way of knowing. I can't decide which would be hotter. I hear her scramble over to the small hotel desk, her stocking feet padding softly on the floor. I hear the rustling of papers.
I've found them, sir!
Her voice is both simpering and breathy. The slap is really working on her. I bet it was on her face. I wish it was on mine. I hear Sir crack open his briefcase, then the crinkle of papers, and then the case is slammed closed. I hear another slap, followed by a rapacious, feminine moan.
You know what?
Sir snaps, angrily.
Thomas and that blonde bitch can just sit in the car and wait. I'm pissed, and I'm gonna take it out on your cunt, slut. Bend the fuck over, spread your whore legs, and grab your ankles.
I already know that Maya is wearing her sheer, black negligee, with no undergarments whatsoever. Banning all bras and panties was one of Sir's first and most wise decisions. What sense does it make to have a walking set of fuckable holes wearing an extra layer of clothing? Sir thinks that women's undergarments are superfluous and stupid.
Just like me.
I giggle at the realization. Clearly Maya's attractive body has done its job of stoking Sir's passions. If only I was that sexy. I would give anything to be so irresistible, but of course, these are just the pointless musings of a pointless girl. I hear a single, aggressive zip and another slap. There is a long pause, a deep groan of pleasure, and then a series of rapid, rhythmic clapping sounds. These slaps join a perfect chorus of enraptured, female whimpers and angry, male grunts. As soon as the sounds touch my ears, I instinctively thrust my left hand back down to my cunt. I drive two fingers inside, as I grip my right breast with the other hand and squeeze. I alternate between making lustful, passionate glances at the camera, and pressing my ear to the door to hear my sister's violent fucking. I massage vigorously, enamored with the sounds of lovemaking so near and yet so far. I will never be in Maya's place. She is the smarter, better, hotter sister, and Sir's attention will always go to her first.
Good.
This is right. This is proper. I realize my home is here in the closet, because it is all a stupid girl like me deserves. At this very moment, I am aggressively masturbating, in front of a camera, enthralled by the sounds of a man fucking my stepsister. Is that a normal act for an upstanding human? Of course not. It's the vile, shameful behavior of a slutty, servile creature whose place is on the floor, kissing the feet of a man. As I gaze up again at the camera, my mind momentarily considers how damning this footage must be. It is highlighting my perverse, unhinged desire for sexual gratification, for subjugation. If anyone besides Sir were to see it, I feel a single spark of clarity, which feels so uncommon these days. Others will see this. Anyone, everyone will have an opportunity to see this. Sir has always said that he wished he could find a way to show off his property anonymously. The camera is that method.
Right now, through the live feed, every man on earth might be watching. Every single male friend I've ever known can see me. Every classmate, coworker, and authority figure, all watching me. My old boss, my high school teachers, my college professors, they are all staring at me. Shit, my own father could be watching me at this very moment. All of my shame and nakedness are openly visible for their enjoyment. I am debasing myself for their pleasure. The claustrophobia, the darkness, all of my former fears evaporate as I focus in on this single, churning horror within my mind. I have to stop. I can't let them see. They will never look at me the same again, after witnessing what a disgusting, horny, subhuman sex fiend I truly am. I command my body to stop its debauchery immediately. There is no way I can continue this. All of my debasement for Sir was fine. I have begun desiring it. I was happy to serve for his pleasure. But this? It's too much. I feel a powerful surge of course-correcting sensations poisoning my mind. I try to gather my self-control. My brain strains to find a means of stopping my body, but the mental effort is exhausting. My hand stays pressed tightly to my quivering clit, as my other hand continues massaging my breast. I can see Mr. McCallum, my high school gym teacher, watching me with the same leering eyes he had during my senior year. I see Jeffrey Somber, my middle school crush, gazing at this display of perversion. Carlos, the cute cashier, is staring at my naked form. Every bit of respect or admiration he might have had for me, as a fellow human being, has instantaneously disappeared. I can feel moisture forming in my eyes. How can I live, knowing that every man alive has witnessed the depths of my depravity? An answer chimes in my brain, with thoughts that seem so foreign, yet so familiar. These men are simply enjoying the natural delights of my feminine form. Why would I seek to deprive them of that? Well, I suppose. My physical attractiveness is my one and only source of value. Why wouldn't I want to show every inch of it? That is true, but... These misogynistic truths swirl within my mind, gathering momentum. I was just considering the fact that my place was on the floor, kissing Sir's feet. If he wants me to kiss the feet of every other man on the planet, should I defy him? And no, of course not. But, if he demands that I make doting ministrations to the cock of every man I've ever met, will I refuse his commands? What right do I have to say no to his orders? Am I a man? With a will of my own? Or am I a woman, whose value is derived from his opinions of me? I am a woman, and rejecting a man's desires is unthinkable. I can't. I need to imagine the ocean of men who have thought to momentarily grant my existence value, and I need to do everything I can to satisfy them. It is my job. Without them, my life is meaningless. These men are granting me their lust and attention. What more could a stupid girl like me ask for? These thoughts are so humiliating, but every cell within my brain sighs with agreement. The electricity flowing outward from my sex is all the confirmation I need. My fingers feel amazing, as they deftly stimulate my clitoris, but the thoughts. All of these new twisted truths coursing through my mind. Fuck, these thoughts take me beyond nirvana. I gaze up at the dim red light, my eyes fluttering wildly. Look at me! I whisper. See my submission! See my humility! I'll do anything to please men, because their pleasure all that matters to me. I am nothing! I do not deserve their gaze. But if they desire me, I am here. My thoughts send a small orgasm rippling through my frame. I shiver with euphoria. I hope more men see me, and more, and more. Perhaps if I am good enough, one day, every man in the world might think of me and feel the blood rush to their cocks. That will mean that I have true value. That will give my life true worth. There is a loud knock at the front door, and I hear Sir grunt again with increased frustration. There is a brief scuffling sound, before a blinding light floods in on me. The sudden illumination causes me to clamp my eyes shut, even as another body is thrust against me. Get in there, bitch! Sir snaps in a whisper. Tom doesn't know you are here! So don't make a fucking sound! He is shoving Maya against me, attempting to hide both of us in this tiny closet. He tries to close the door, but there isn't remotely enough room for the two of us to stand inside. Another knock sounds. Sir's eyes are slits of rage. He hisses quietly through clenched teeth. Get on top of Barb! He lifts her bodily, and places her backwards onto my shoulders. Her legs dangle down my back, and she grips my hair for balance. The door swings closed, and I am once again sealed in darkness. At least I am no longer alone. Outside the closet, I hear the front door open, and Sir speaks. Hey, Tom. What made you decide to come up? His voice is cool and even, without a trace of frustration. Maya's thighs are pressed tightly against my ears. Her woman's, dripping with a mixture of both Sir's and her own fluids, is less than an inch from my face. The unmistakable scent of sex fills my nostrils. Her perfectly shaven crotch is so close that I can make it out, even in the dark. Tom answers, his voice barely audible with my ears covered. Naomi said that she had to use the bathroom. I'm sorry, Jim, I figured you wouldn't mind. So this is Tom? The bastard who is trying to end the payload. I can feel my internal hatred for him growing. Not at all, pal. I am so impressed that Sir can keep his cool around this shithead. The bathroom is right through there, ma'am. I hear the woman's footsteps move toward the bathroom, as Sir continues. Yeah, Tom. This hotel isn't great, but it'll do until I find a better place, like a permanent apartment. Cramped in this closet, with my half-naked stepsister's pussy directly in my face. And the camera. I wonder if there is actually a better place on Earth.
9. The Runaway.
Naomi, I pull down my ratty pants and sit on the toilet. The seat is cold, but I hardly notice. I am alone for a moment, that gives me time to think. Privacy will probably be a scarce commodity in the days ahead, so I savor it while I can. I've been collared, with a witness. That fact is simultaneously comforting and terrifying. My master has yet to fill out the paperwork, but as soon as he turns in one official document with my signature, I'll essentially be his property. Of course, the documentation doesn't call me property. It only lists this as guardianship. As far as the legal side of it goes, I'm simply under his protection. Like a minor or a geriatric old woman, they can disguise this violation of human rights with whatever legal terminology they choose. But I'm not an idiot. Every man who sees my collar is going to expect me to follow Tom's instructions to the letter, just like a good little slave. That's the life I've doomed myself to. Hopefully Tom will treat the collaring as a nominal one. The very fact that my future hangs in the balance, depending entirely upon his mercy. It fills me with shame, but I can see no other recourse. My mind races as I consider the repercussions of today's events. Thomas, the man who collared me, seems like he may be the last decent man alive. When I saw him hurl that damn collar, the same collar that currently rests around my neck, I knew that he was the only man I could trust to own me. Still, I cannot trust him too much. I am in danger. Every day that the payload exists, my situation remains incredibly perilous. Thomas seems to be honest and trustworthy, but if I have misjudged him, women have lost so much already. Everything that we've worked so hard to build, gone, as if it was never ours to begin with. Tears threaten to flood my eyes once again. Female equality has essentially been erased, and now our individuality, our very personhood, rests on the edge of complete ruin. All has been swept away under the unstoppable tide of the patriarchy. Women are being treated like pets now, property to be claimed. It's heartbreaking. In this moment, I realize how physically exhausted I am. I double-check to make sure the bathroom door is locked. I see that it is. I think it might be safe to close my eyes for a few precious moments. I wouldn't dare fall asleep, though. I'm in James' hotel room. He's one man inno for a fact I can't trust, but the urge to rest my eyelids is overwhelming. Still, I can't actually risk falling asleep. I'm just going to relax for a few seconds, but I know I can't allow myself to doze off. Inexplicably, I am suddenly back in my foster parents' home, in my teenage bedroom. The change is completely abrupt, but my mind doesn't question it. I rise from my bed and glance around the room. Nothing seems out of the ordinary, but there is a deep sense of fear resonating within me. I open my door, and I am immediately greeted by a flood of balloons. It's my birthday. Why does that fact fill me with dread? For the life of me, I can't remember. My body begins to walk down the hallway. I can feel my unease growing exponentially, but my steps are constant and robotic. They are leading me towards, what? I don't know, but it's something bad. It's something evil. It's something that is unfathomably heinous. The hallway seems incredibly long, but again, I don't really question it. All I can focus on is the looming sense of dread, which rises with each step. The hallway finally ends, and I find myself in the kitchen. My foster mother is standing in front of a sink full of dishes. I can hear her humming a cheery tune as she works. She is wearing a housewife's dress from the 1950s, and her hands are covered with yellow gloves, shimmering from the sink's soapy water. She turns to me, and I can see the dullness in her eyes, the listlessness. Your father wants to see you in the garage, Naomi. She turns back to the dishes, still humming. Her words are quiet, unassuming, and meek. They lack any of the fire that she had always possessed before something changed. But what caused her to weaken? The answer continues to escape me. Happy birthday. She drones, as if the words lack any meaning to her. The words mean everything to me, though. They somehow sound like a death sentence, although, I cannot fathom how such mundane words can generate so much dread within me. I turn automatically, even as my fear redoubles. I shouldn't go into the garage, it's dangerous in there. I need to stop. My body takes one step after another, refusing to acknowledge the objections from my terrified mind. The kitchen seems unbelievably small, as my hand rests on the doorknob. The brass knob turns, and I slip into the darkness within. A burst of light fills the room, and my foster father is standing beside me. He is massive, taller than I've ever seen him before. He places one colossal hand on my shoulder. Happy 18th birthday! He breathes. These are the words I've wanted to hear my entire life, but now they seem so repulsive to me. I look up at him, and I can see his rapacious eyes looming over me. He wants power, control, and deep in my heart, I know he wants something else. He has been a trustworthy father figure to me for years, but now the way he views me has changed. He no longer sees me as his daughter. I am a woman. I am an object to be possessed. The growing desire in his eyes breaks my heart. I thought I could always trust him. There was a time when that was true, perhaps, but he has changed. He has been corrupted. Immediately, I realize that I truly hate him. I have never felt so betrayed. I want to lash out at him, claw at his face, and spit in his eye. Instead, I do nothing. I have always been a good, obedient daughter. Suddenly changing at this moment is harder than I would have expected. Watch! He commands, and somehow I am compelled to obey. A screen appears in front of me. Flashing lights beam outward, and my eyes seem transfixed. My brain knows what the lights mean, but I cannot look away.
I stare at the glowing, pulsating lights for a torturously long time. When the illumination fades, I blink. I expect to feel entirely different, but somehow I feel just the same. The only change within me is the looming sense of hatred and disgust that I feel for my father. He pulls my head up to look into his face. His expression sickens me to my core. It is the look of a king, a ruler, an unquestionable despot. His lips stretch into an insidious grin. You already saw this during the event, but you were too young. Now since you are a grown woman, it can run its course. An overwhelming sense of deja vu accosts my mind. I have heard these words before, while standing in this room, with this very man. Every fiber of my being hoped that events would change this time, but they did not. I see a collar held in his grip, as it approaches my neck. I am doomed. He presses a powerful hand onto my shoulder, and I cannot help but kneel. He is so much stronger than me. The leather slips around my throat, and the clasp seals it tight. I expect a powerful change to sweep over me, but again, I feel unaltered. My deep, passionate hatred for him remains, and I feel absolutely no different. I close my eyes, in a vain attempt to block out this horrific moment. I hear the sound of a loosening belt, and the jingle of a buckle. This is followed by the sickening sound of a fly unzipping. Now, Naomi, it is time for you too. He stops, and sniffs the air. There is a sudden commotion from the kitchen. Smoke? Fire? Something distracts my father for a moment, and he storms away from me, angrily. Again, the sense of deja vu floods in. This has happened before. I look around the garage, my mind still swirling with fierce emotions. I see the back door. It leads to freedom. To a chance at a free life. I try to move toward it, but my feet feel so incredibly heavy. Each step is unbearably slow, and my hand reaches out for the doorknob, as if it is my only lifeline. In this moment, that is exactly what it is. I hear the footsteps of my father approaching from behind. I have to move faster. I have to be faster. Hey! Is everything okay in there? The voice crashes into my mind, and I awaken with a violent start. It is the voice of Thomas, just outside the bathroom. I fell asleep. Even after I told myself I couldn't. My hand moves reflexively to my throat, and the symbol of my oppression is still there. I'm fine. I say, embarrassed. My stomach is hurting a little. I'll be out in a second. I try to keep my words as demure as possible, but I have no idea if I'm doing a good job. Okay, I'm sorry. Take your time. Thomas's words sound calm and caring, but I've been fooled before. I hear him talking with James again, although their words are indistinct. Through the wall to my left, I hear another strange sound. It sounds like muffled female moans. Moans of pleasure. This is a hotel, so I suppose it's just some guests in the next suite over, but by the layout of this hotel room, I thought that this wall adjoined the kitchen and the little broom closet I passed on my way in. It doesn't matter. I have my own problems to deal with. The nightmare, which I was just forced to relive, floods back into my mind. It was almost more of a memory than a dream, although some facts were distorted. I suppose that always occurs with dreams. My foster father did betray me, and he placed a collar around my neck. That's all that matters. I escaped him. I tore his collar off, but now I am collared yet again. I have only one theory to explain why my father failed in his attempt to claim me. Of course, I can't be certain, but it's the only thing that makes sense. He didn't remember, or perhaps he never bothered to learn, that the date on my birth certificate is wrong. I wasn't born on the 12th of this month. I was born on the 21st. It is the one typo that saved my life. I was not a woman when he tried to collar me. I look at my flip phone and breathe a reluctant sigh. Today is the 24th. My window of safety is gone. I must be the strangest anomaly on the planet. I am a collared woman, who has never been subjected to the payload as an adult. I have taken part in a collaring that was, perhaps, the world's first actual nominal collaring. How ironic. Now comes the hardest part. I must pretend to be conquered, in order to maintain that status quo. If Thomas turns out to be a monster, I will run again. This is my life now. 10. The reward. Thomas, the moment I step through the door of my house, I am greeted with the most loving embrace that I can imagine. Rachel coils her arms around me, and instinctively I lean down to kiss her. Work was a bitch and a half today, quite literally. The office was buzzing with the news that I have a collared woman. The situation will only get worse, once it's revealed that I collared Rachel as well. Most of the men seemed incredibly envious of me, the moment they saw Naomi. I'm not blind. I know that she is young and incredibly beautiful, but she is a person, and I have every intention of respecting her wishes. Obviously, I can't trust any of my fellow agents with her. Their greedy, lustful eyes stared at her with nearly transparent desire. Even James seemed to have a twinge of envy, although that might have been my imagination. If I had to trust anyone with her, it'd be him. But the moment my lips touch Rachel's, all of my worries drain away, and I am lost in this wonderful kiss. I move my hand to cup her chin, and my fingers drag across the loathsome leather that adorns her neck. Reality sets back in immediately. This is still my wife, and she loves me. However, this adoring display didn't originate from her. It was forced upon her. I maintain the kiss for a moment longer, and then pull away. I feel one of her arms drop from my shoulder, and her fingers brush gently against the crotch of my pants. My manhood stirs immediately. The payload has robbed me of a normal sex life for such a long time, but now it is begging Rachel to increase it exponentially, if I let her.
The reason is as obvious as it is painful. Providing sex for a man can be viewed as an act of servitude, and she's dying to serve. She wants to debase herself, lower herself, do anything she can to make herself smaller than me. When she acts only as a lowly, humble servant, she receives a reward from the payload. It's like a heroin addict getting their fix. Outwardly, I ignore her sensual touch. Her body is pressed tightly against mine, and the soft motions of her fingers are discreet. Bringing it up now won't help anything. The fact that it feels amazing is less important to me, but I'd be lying if I didn't admit that it's a factor.
Rachel, I have something to talk with you about.
My voice is calm, but I'm sure it contains volumes. Rachel doesn't seem to notice anything amiss.
Yes, Ma.
She begins, and then clears her throat.
My dear, what is it?
She changed it at the last second, but Master was clearly the word on her mind. She must know that I would hate that title, but her desire to be owned, dominated, and enslaved must be almost overwhelming. I ignore her slip up.
I need you to meet someone, Rachel.
I step away from her, and gesture to Naomi, who steps around the corner timidly. I closely watch Rachel's face as she examines the new arrival. Her emotions are too numerous to fully interpret. I see her eyes widen as they land on the collar, but as she scans the rest of Naomi's body, I see other expressions that I don't recognize. My wife looks so beautiful to me. I suddenly notice that I've been distracted by the loveliness of her face. She couldn't have changed that much in a single day. Why am I so mesmerized? It takes a moment to realize that it's probably because she's made herself up. Rachel has never needed much makeup, but she's always been a master of accentuating her own attractiveness. And this is the first time she's worn makeup in months. It puts her natural beauty on full display. Of course, she would make herself look as attractive as possible. Isn't that exactly what a doting wife would do? She's filling her societal role so impeccably, like a perfect housewife. Part of me wants to enjoy this, but her reasons are all wrong. After a moment of silence, she speaks.
Who is this woman to us, Thomas?
I have no idea what could be swirling around in her payload-addled mind.
She is, ahem, she will be staying with us for a while, in order to keep her safe. I saved her from being collared by an attacker, but I had to bring her home. That's because, well, actually, I was the one who ended up having to collar her, in order to save her life.
I say the last part defensively. The situation seems so embarrassing to me. I'm introducing my wife, whom I love, to the slave woman I acquired. My mind can't help but imagine the fury I'd feel if the roles were reversed. But if I was expecting anger from Rachel, then I'm a fool. Rachel steps close to me again. She hugs me, returning her hand back to its dirty work. Her fingers dance across the outline of my cock, moving faster than before. I see a mysterious smile forming on her face.
I'm so proud of you for rescuing her.
She coos with admiration.
I'm sure the two of us will be able to make this house into a perfect home for you.
Rachel's simple response has left me flummoxed. Of course, if Naomi is staying with us and eating our food, I have no problem allowing her to help out with chores. That's fine, I suppose. But I certainly don't expect her to make my house a home. I honestly don't know what I expect from her. I suppose I will. I mean, we will. I guess it'll take time to agree upon her place within this household. My life has gotten so complicated of late.
Come inside, Naomi. We have a spare bedroom you can use.
Naomi nods obediently and follows me inside. As I step into the living room, my eyes widen immediately. The entire place is spotless. In our former lives, my wife was reasonably tidy, but the event threw a monkey wrench into that. But this? This is immaculate. Rosemary always has at least a few toys spread across the floor, but they are all conspicuously put away. I turn back to my wife, inquisitively.
Where's Aro? I sent her to my sister's for the evening. Is that all right?
Her words are honest, as if she's seeking my approval.
Wait, I thought that you didn't want her to spend time with her aunt and uncle, because Jason collared Cheryl.
The absurdity of my statement hits me immediately.
Yes, my dear, but now I'm collared too. It doesn't make sense for us to hold back at this point, does it? I apologize if I made a mistake.
Her words are far too meek, and they sound very little like my actual wife. Nevertheless, her new logic is mostly sound. Aro is too young to be affected by the payload, and Jason isn't a monster, even if he collared his wife far too quickly.
No, it's fine. I suppose I'll get supper started. I can cook up some burgers or... Oh, sweetheart, you've had a long day. Wouldn't you prefer for me to whip up something for you? It's no trouble. I can make whatever you're in the mood for.
Rachel smiles at me, innocently. I can feel annoyance rising in my voice.
Rachel, where did you put the list we made this morning?
Go get it. Rachel's shoulders drop in defeat, but she moves quickly to the bedroom. I follow her, and watch her retrieve it from her bra drawer. It was placed beneath all of her clothes, as if she intended on hiding it. She holds it out to me. I take it, walk back to the kitchen, and stick it on the refrigerator.
I think you'll notice that an item on the list is, Tom continues doing the cooking. That hasn't changed, Rachel.
My wife nods quickly.
I'm sorry, Thomas, honestly. I didn't know we were still following that pointless list I made. After all, you collared another woman already. I thought you must have decided that the list was unnecessary. Please forgive me. Damn it, Rachel.
My voice reverberates angrily within our small kitchen.
The list isn't pointless. I only collared Naomi to save her life. The rest of the list stands.
I can see that my words are having a profound effect on my wife. I am yelling at her, quite disrespectfully,
and yet a sick part of her seems to love it. There is shame in her eyes, blended with arousal. She drops to the floor and begins kissing the tops of my shoes.
I'm so sorry, Thomas, I'm such a retard.
Behind her, Naomi follows suit, kneeling, but not approaching.
Stop that, Rachel!
She freezes immediately, and I pull away from her.
Don't kiss my feet. My shoes are probably filthy. I had to run through a back alley this morning.
I breathe a deep sigh, and I try to center myself.
Look, I'm sorry for yelling. Just stand up, both of you, and I'll start cooking.
Somehow, I can sense that my raised voice and demeaning tone have caused the payload to pleasure Rachel. She displeased me, so I punished her, and she's reveling in the abuse. If anything, my apology at the end seemed to leave a dissatisfying punctuation to her experience. She begins to stand, and she speaks, her voice soft and demure.
You brought Naomi into our house. If she cooks for you, that's still you providing the cooking, right? Please forgive me if that's a stupid idea.
Immediately, Naomi steps forward. Her head is still bowed, but she speaks passionately.
Oh yes, sir!
I am an excellent cook, and I'd love to prepare meals for you.
I can cook and clean. It's the least I can do. You're such a good master.
Beside her, my wife nods emphatically. I sigh.
Look, don't call me master, but fine, shit.
My mind and body are entirely drained from work. I really don't feel like cooking, I just can't let Rachel do it, because of the list.
It's fine if you want to make food tonight, Naomi. But remember, you are a guest. Don't do anything you don't want to. I'm going to get a shower before supper.
The two women nod, and I walk down the hall to the bathroom. I close the door and turn the shower on. Quickly stripping out of my work clothes, I toss them into the hamper. As I step into the steaming hot bath, the soothing water washes over me. It helps me clear my head. My brain seems bombarded with countless contradictory thoughts. I suppose part of me always wanted more control in my marriage. What man, what human, doesn't want more control in life? But getting it like this, it's all wrong. Sure, I want my wife to pamper me a little, what guy doesn't? But I want her to do it for the right reasons. Still, I'd be lying if I didn't admit that some slimy part of my mind loved having two doting women kneeling in front of me, longing to service me and treat me with the utmost reverence. Can I truly enjoy this type of manufactured respect? It's like a pair of fake tits. Even when you know that they're fake, some primitive part of your brain tells you, it would feel so good to squeeze your fingers deep into those puppies and... The curtain moves, and I pull away in surprise. Rachel is standing just outside the shower, with her clothes at her feet. Her head is bowed in reverence, and her arms are held behind her back. This presses her large breasts forward, and I can feel my own excitement rising automatically. We have been married for a long time, and normally the sight of her naked figure, which I've seen countless times, would not elicit such a strong reaction. But I have never, ever seen her look so meek, so submissive. Every tiny movement of her body conveys a particular message. I am yours, it seems to exclaim. My body is yours. I am your possession. State your desires, and I will obey them. It is your right, as my husband, my lord, my sire.
May I join you in the shower, dear?
She asks quietly. There is an obvious longing in her voice, but I know she would accept any answer without question. Still, I see no reason to reject this request.
Of course, baby.
I respond, and she steps inside. Without prompting, she reaches for my soap and begins to lather, rubbing her delicate hands across my bare skin. Her smooth movements feel like an act of supplication, and I feel my body shiver. It's been so long since I have felt this type of eager attention. As she works her hands downward, she kneels, with her head still lowered in reverence. I can feel a sinister part of my mind whispering that she belongs on her knees. It's what she's always deserved. It is her place, down at my feet. Why did I ever allow her to join me at my side? I am stronger than she is. I earn over twice as much money as she does. I have always been able to physically dominate her, if I so chose. Why have I allowed her so much power in our relationship? Why haven't I taken control of her from the start? I blink suddenly, shaking myself out of these misogynistic thoughts. When did I suddenly become so domineering? The soft, doting touch of her fingers isn't helping. It's making me view her as a servant. Obviously, I should ask her to stop. In a moment. In just a few moments, I'll make her quit. The water is pouring from the showerhead directly onto her hair now. It is flowing across her face, ruining her makeup. Her mascara is smeared down the sides of her cheeks, making her look so weak, so vulnerable, so defeated. A sick portion of my mind finds this incredibly arousing. She begins to wash my thighs, and her face is even with my manhood. She presses her left cheek against my stiffening shaft, and she looks up at me, with her smeared makeup. I can tell that she is seeking permission. I have no idea what is running through her reprogrammed mind, but I know she wants to please me, to serve me, to worship me. She's dying for it. But she can't do it, not without my approval. Her lips part ever so slightly. She wants to suck my cock. It's obvious. Never before in my life have I received such a clear, nonverbal signal. Something within Rachel needs this. A twinge of frustration sets in. It isn't fair. I want her mouth to envelope me, and she wants the same thing. But I refuse to give in. She made the fucking list. She filled it with all the selfish items she wanted. I won't go against it now. This is her punishment for thinking of herself first. It was the first damn item on the list. So petty. So pointless. She made her fucking bed, and she can sleep in it. I will be strong. Even though it seemingly benefits no one. I will keep my word. I suppose I can exploit a loophole though. As Rachel rubs the side of her face across my cockhead, like a hungry cat, I say the obvious words that will provide some relief to us both. Kissing is not the same as a blowjob. Immediately she goes to work, showering my manhood with delicate, tender kisses. She smooches across the entire length again and again, paying particular attention to the tip of my glands. The soft touch of her lips is maddening, and my cockhead twitches angrily. This isn't what it wants. It wants to slide between her lips, and down her throat. It deserves it. She deserves it. Through her lips, I can sense the pleasure that must be coursing through her body. I'm no fool. I know exactly what is happening. Rachel always considered kissing my cock degrading. She acted like it was some sort of demeaning performance that implied a deep level of submission she would never stoop to. Now, however, the roles have entirely reversed. Now she longs to be debased, and she's craving the pleasure that the payload is giving her. I can hear her moaning softly, stupidly. She has given in entirely. This simple gesture, which she could have always done voluntarily, it's giving her unbelievable gratification. I thought that I could enjoy this, but it's too close to what I actually want. It's more of a frustration than anything else. It feels like the ultimate tease. Hell, she's enjoying this even more than I am. Stand the fuck up, Rachel! I bark, and she immediately obeys. I bet you were enjoying the shit out of that, weren't you? Sheepishly, she nods, with her head hung low in shame. Yeah, well, it was your decision to ban blowjobs, but now you're getting all the cerebral pleasure from the payload, with none of the downsides. That's not fucking fair. Turn around and bend over. She acts without question, whirling around and presenting her cunt to me eagerly. It's currently drooling liquid, pleading to be used. I reach down and rub two fingers across her slit. She is incredibly slick right now, like the slut she is. I am surprised to feel her entire frame shiver at my touch. She's never been this sensitive before. A tiny portion of my mind is repulsed by the knowledge of what made her this way, but the rest of me doesn't care. Of course, her desires are manufactured and unnatural, but they are undeniably alluring. I can feel animalistic desires seeping in, attempting to overwhelm my higher intelligence. I don't even fight them. I've suffered too, damn it. I align my cock with her warm opening, and ram myself inside. I feel the velvety lining of her body caress my entire length, and a rapacious, triumphant smile slips across my lips. She is mine to own. Her cunt was designed to satisfy me. I begin unceremoniously pounding inside her, relishing the warmth and tightness of her pussy, as it performs its natural duty. It has really only ever had one purpose, to pleasure a man, in order to receive his seed. It was designed to feel so good, so amazing, that no man could possibly resist the urge to come inside, and Rachel's cunt is performing this task impeccably. All these years, my love for her has been tested, by her smart mouth, by her choice to question my decisions, by her female stubbornness. I've had to put up with plenty. She's been an imperfect wife. But she is perfect at this. Her feminine body is a glorious tool of sexual gratification. I don't need her mind, or her thoughts, or her opinions. I just need her body, specifically her cunt. In this moment, her humanity is reduced. I know that she wants this. Her payload-soaked brain is craving this desperately, but deep down, I don't really care. Right now, I'd keep going, even if she begged me to stop. For months I've been striving to maintain her humanity for her, but she's begged me to take it, and I have. I'll take everything she has to offer. I will possess this woman, in every sense of the word. I dig my fingers into her hips, gaining purchase as I thrust. My hand viciously slaps her ass, and she yelps sensuously. All this power is rushing to my head at once, and I've never felt so invigorated. Rachel is mewling and moaning like an unabashed whore. I open my mouth to tell her to quiet down, but then I stop myself. I don't care how much noise she makes. This is my wife, and there is no shame in me fucking her. Naomi might be able to hear us through the door, but I can't convince myself to care. It was her decision to be collared. She can deal with the repercussions. With a powerful thrust, my hips drive Rachel's entire body forward. Her face presses into the shower wall, and her hands knock the shampoos down from their ledge. I ignore her flailing, as I continue using her body. I'm shamelessly reveling in the pleasure that she's giving me. The pleasure that I'm taking from her. I sense possessive, rapacious thoughts rising within me, suppressing all of my love and empathy. You filled that list with shit to keep me from using you sexually, Rachel. But I'm your husband. Legally, I own you now. I'll use you no matter what. You're a fuck sleeve for me. Take me, Thomas. She begs, pathetically. I'm worthless. I'm so sorry I wrote all of that selfish shit. Please take me. Own me. Domesticate me. Oh. I feel a climax shake her body, which makes me feel incredibly masculine. She's never come this fast before. I slam forward violently again and again, forcing her body against the wall in a way that can't possibly be comfortable. Rachel screams with euphoric pleasure just the same, and a funny thought touches my mind. This might be the first time I've truly fucked my wife. Obviously, I've made love to her countless times, but it's always been a shared experience. I always thought as much about her pleasure as mine. But this time, I'm only focusing on my own cock's gratification. It's absolutely amazing. It's so gratifying to be completely selfish. Why did I ever do anything else? After a few short minutes, the urge to climax hits me. I don't hesitate for a moment. Instead, I immediately empty my entire load inside her. The pleasure is unusually intense, and I can feel my thick cum filling her up and coating her cervix. I release a loud, possessive groan of pleasure, like a wild animal claiming its mate. In our old lives, such relatively brief intercourse would have been deeply dissatisfying to Rachel. Now, however, I can feel her cunt clenching, attempting to milk every drop of my seed from me, in the ultimate act of adoration. I can feel her pussy flexing violently as she climaxes a second time, but deep down, I know that there was nothing particularly stellar about my performance. Previously, making her come took skill and concentration, but now it's so simple. I'm playing the game of sex on easy mode. It's ironic too. She's receiving just as much pleasure as I've ever given her before, more, probably. And I've only focused on myself. I suppose I must admit that the payload does have certain upsides. As I begin to soften within her, I draw myself out. She immediately turns around and begins using her tongue to clean our shared liquids off my cock. This alone is highly unusual. Rachel always hated the taste of her own feminine juices, and she would never kiss a dick covered in her own cum before. But it's what I want, and she knows it. She's bending to my unspoken will, and receiving mental stimulation as a reward. Her eyes flutter with rapture. Earlier, I couldn't enjoy her teasing kisses, but now they are a beautiful punctuation to a wonderful experience. Her soft lips touch me everywhere, deftly cleaning my manhood. I pat her head. Good girl, Rachel. The words are so patronizing, but they flow easily from my lips. Are you gonna take that seed and give me a son with it? She nods eagerly. I'm your willing broodmare, she whispers, planting another kiss on my cockhead. At her words, I begin to stiffen again, but I think I'll wait until tonight to use her a second time. I can feel a bit of clarity returning to my mind. I said some awful things in the heat of passion, but that doesn't make me a bad person. I open the shower curtain to step out. I gasp immediately, as I notice that Naomi is standing in the doorway. Her head is bowed, with her eyes closed. She's standing completely still, waiting patiently. Naomi, what the fuck? I cover myself instinctively, which draws a disappointed grunt from Rachel. How long have you been standing there? Why did you open the door? Immediately, she drops to her knees in shame. I'm sorry, sir! She exclaims. I've only been here a moment, and the door wasn't closed when I arrived. What? I look at Rachel. Her eyes are downcast. Did you leave the door open? Rachel nods dolefully. I must have, Thomas. Please forgive me. This was no accident. Rachel wanted Naomi to hear. It was either because she wanted to show her place as my mate, or to entice Naomi to join. I don't know which. There's no telling how the payload has warped her mind. I pull the shower curtain closed again. Close the door, Naomi. And tell me what you need. I hear the door shut, and a muffled voice comes through. I can't find your pots and pans, sir. I was going to cook spaghetti, but you don't have anything to cook in. I sigh. They're in the UGG? Give us a minute and we'll show you. Yes, sir. I'll prep everything I can until then. Naomi says, as her voice trails back down the hallway. Rachel has wasted no time, having already begun worshipping my cock again with her mouth. She is eagerly attending to the head, perilously riding the line between kissing and sucking. I sigh with satisfaction and a bit of apprehension. Whenever I stop the payload, this will all end. But there's nothing wrong with enjoying myself in the meantime, is there? 11. The criminal. Abigail. So, you're certain that Agent Evans is not making any real progress? I can hear the voice, but I can't see its source. I know whom the words belong to, however. They flow out confidently with a powerful, heavy tone, which exudes a domineering sense of might. Of course they do. It's a male who is speaking. All the fibers of my being tell me that each and every syllable contains power, so much power. The words have authority over me. Every deep, masculine syllable that touches my ears reminds me that the speaker possesses a wellspring of unquestionable strength. I feel a tremor of awe resonating throughout my being. A part of me finds this authority terrifying, but I work to remind myself that ultimately, it's comforting. I am a willing servant to the voice, and so I am safe from its fury. I find a deep sense of relief in that realization. By now, I have come to understand that every man has a place over me. Of course, part of my mind has been insisting that for some time now, but Gregory, my former dearest, had ingrained in me the idea that he was the one that I should serve above all. The past few weeks have helped me to fully comprehend that it wasn't just him that I needed to cower beneath. I am the ground for the heel of every man. Even this one. This male, Bogart, Gregory, every single man is my ruler, and I am merely a worthless, mousy underling. Even Thomas Evans, that bastard who wants to give all women back their rights and take away the constant pleasure that our servitude affords us, even he holds a place above me. He rejected my attempts to service him. Of course, that was his prerogative as one of my masters. His decision to spurn my advances wounded me to my soul, but it was a perfect chance to show me how lowly and pathetic I am. The voice speaks again, resonating with a dominant magnetism. I understand that he seems to be struggling, but I'm worried that he may hit upon something useful to his goals. We can't risk Thomas making some seemingly innocuous discovery and sharing it with others. Any tiny chink in the payload is a threat to our beautiful status quo. You don't think that he could possibly be on the verge of a breakthrough? Honestly, I would never in my life have expected to hear this particular man in my current location. At the moment, I'm in Bogart's office. A field office of the FBI is not a place where one expects to hear such a sinister, evil person. It isn't my place to judge, obviously. With all of my proper training, I am aware that I can never question him or the validity of his words, and yet I still know that he is a wicked, heinous being. The fact that he is one of my masters changes nothing. In a world where the weaker sex has been fully and irrevocably subjugated, I still believe that there is an objective morality that exists. I mean, it isn't my place to care, and I'm powerless to do anything about it, obviously. Just the same, I am still capable of knowing these things. No man has yet told me to stop, so I continue to ponder them. It goes without saying that I am merely a tool, to be used at the behest of a man. Men are responsible for both their actions and the actions of their possessions. And as a possession, I am free from responsibility and guilt. This is a good thing, honestly. Because if I am ordered to do something terrible, of course I will do it, and I will probably revel in it. It feels incredible to be used. That's just the way of the world now. I don't need to feel any sense of shame for my actions, because they were not based on my own decisions. I imagine a hammer, somehow granted sentience by a trickster god. If the hammer was used to build a beautiful home, could it somehow claim credit for the construction of the house? Not really. It was only a single implement utilized by the craftsman to accomplish the task. On the other hand, if the hammer were used to cave in the skull of another man or a child, could the hammer be held responsible? No. It would only be the murderer who could be blamed. The same applies to me. If I am commanded to obey an evil request, I am not guilty. Such burdens are no longer mine to endure. I must simply accomplish my tasks as they are given to me and enjoy the delectable reward. What a blissful place in the world that I've been allowed to hold. I simply serve my masters and soak in all of the cerebral rapture as it floods in. Somewhere, from the deepest cavern of my brain, a tiny, hideous thought flares. I am responsible for my actions. I am to blame for my own wickedness. I cannot dodge accountability for any of my misdeeds. I shake my head forcefully, trying to banish such unfathomable thoughts from my mind. I cannot be guilty if I merely serve. I cannot be guilty if I merely serve. I continue repeating these thoughts within my mind, and they work their way out in a gentle hum. I silence the sounds immediately, however. Women should never speak without permission. My eyes close, and I stifle a contented sigh, as these wise thoughts send a pleasant, soothing sensation rippling throughout my body. I grin slightly. It is a bit difficult to form a true smile, with my mouth spread as it is. Dearest is currently stretching my lips uncomfortably far apart, but that's a good thing. Ultimately, I know that any discomfort I experience is worth it, when you consider how nice it must feel for Dearest. While not particularly rigid at the moment, I do continue to gently suckle. I never know when Dearest might stiffen up a bit, and I can put my skills to work, granting yet another climax and receiving the delicious reward that comes with such a doting job well done. Dearest, isn't my name for Bogart, incidentally. Surprisingly, he has not requested any special name. No, Dearest, is my name for Bogart's cock, it's the name he demands I use. So I continue to work, making sure that Dearest receives all the tender, wet stimulation that it deserves. The base of the shaft is unbelievably hairy. When his cock is flaccid, it sits so close to his bushy sack that I'm reminded of the sensation of kissing a shaggy dog. I doubt that he's ever groomed in his life, and his natural musk is almost overwhelming. Of course, there is a deep and insistent part of my mind that reminds me that all of these shortcomings only improve the quality of my servitude. If Bogart were more attractive, or if he groomed, or if his body odor was more pleasant, then it might seem like I was doing all of this down here for my own sexual gratification. And that would be all wrong. A subservient woman doesn't pleasure a man for selfish reasons, she does it because it's right and proper. The fact that it is ultimately the hottest, most disgustingly erotic experience that she's capable of participating in, that is merely coincidental. Reassuring endorphins flood outward from my properly programmed mind. I don't fully understand how I know that this is happening, but I do, and I revel in it. I'm sure that I was aware at some point, long ago, but such concepts baffle me now. Why should I focus on them? They're irrelevant to mine or Dearest's pleasure. The voices continue over the sounds of my soft ministrations, and a lazy part of my mind tunes in. I can sense Bogart shaking his head. No, Agent Evans has almost reached a standstill. Multiple factors have worked to hamper his efforts. He finally gave in and collared his wife, and he also collared another beautiful, young slut. He's probably fucking that bitch's brains out as we speak. Is that so?
Yes.
Bogart chuckles, although I sense something that resembles envy in the sound. I can't imagine Thomas trying to end the payload now. It would mean he'd have to give up that hot piece of ass. Of course, he claims that he hasn't touched her, but I think we all know that's bullshit. Tom's been struggling with tons of subtle obstacles, almost all of which were placed in his way by me. Bogart chortles again, and the prideful satisfaction is obvious in his voice. I see. How interesting that you take the majority of the credit for his failure. The unseen speaker muses, and my brain conjures up the image of its owner. Nicholas Gambini. As the name touches my consciousness, I feel a tremor of awe and fear within my spine. His face materializes within my mind automatically. I can see his square and incredibly masculine jawline. He has a darkly handsome visage, edged by a full head of pitch black hair. His deep, steely eyes have an uncomfortable way of watching others. I have only seen him once, years ago, at an arraignment during which he successfully dodged prosecution. I think. It can be so hard to remember such silly things now. I certainly doubt he remembers me, but I could never forget a face as striking as his. I know that Gambini is many things to me. He is a master, ruler, and an irrefutable authority figure. he is many other things as well. Criminal mastermind, head of an organized crime family, and perhaps a murderer too, if the Bureau's intel is correct. None of that affects me directly, though. Such matters are far above my station, but that doesn't mean I can't understand them in a general, passive way. Bogart lets out a huff that I can feel inside my mouth. I can take credit for his failures, because I have been orchestrating them from the start. I have placed other like-minded parties in his way, which slow him down more than I could alone. I've been able to ensure that every other agent on the case shares our opinions on the payload, and I've been slowly increasing Evan's workload with other irrelevant tasks. Lastly, I have an ace in the hole, you might say, an extra bit of insurance that allows me to get daily, precise reports about his progress. Or lack thereof. Much more information than anyone else would get by reading the official reports that Evans releases. You're referring to Agent James Owens, correct? Your little double agent? There is a smug tone in Gambini's voice, which I recognize immediately. It is so self-assured and prideful. His words contain the type of inflection that a man might use when speaking to someone of an infinitely lower station, like a woman, perhaps, or a dog. But he isn't speaking to a pet or a canine. He's speaking to Bogart, and I can feel Dearest retract ever so slightly. It's a tiny gesture, but the human mouth is incredibly sensitive. How did you know about him? My master snaps and shifts in his seat uncomfortably, and Dearest almost slips from my lips. I work quickly to adjust. I don't want to let the stubby little thing get away. I have other means of getting information besides you, Bogart. You would be wise to remember that. I know that James pretends to hate the payload, and I suppose he has that idiot Thomas fooled. But I am also aware that he has two collared women in that hotel room with him. I hear Nicholas' chair creak as he leans it backward with a sigh. Bogart, look. I realize that the Bureau views me as a threat, and of course in most matters the FBI's goals are, let us say, misaligned with my own. While we do happen to agree on the payload for the most part, you'll understand if I don't exactly trust you or your people. I see. Naturally. I need to keep my ear to the ground in all things. You don't get to where I am by trusting the feds. You understand. As the talking continues, my mind drifts back to my own situation. Their conversation isn't really something that I have to worry about. Sometimes I like to listen in, but it's like a child listening in on her parents' financial discussions. I have no say in the proceedings, and I doubt my dim, feminine mind could comprehend it fully, anyway. It's best if I concentrate on my own interests, and Dearest's, of course. My knees are getting incredibly sore. This is unsurprising, considering the fact that I've been kneeling beneath Bogart's desk for hours, slowly servicing him. He still isn't particularly hard at the moment, but I've continued gently lavishing on Dearest with my warm, wet mouth. I know that it's a proper place for me, but part of me wishes that I wasn't stuffed down here. If I was allowed to move around more, I might be able to serve Bogart and Dearest even better. Sometimes when I really get going, my head bumps the underside of the table. Bogart hates that, so I always work to prevent it. Of course, I'm not alone underneath this desk. Blair is with me. One would assume that it would be incredibly cramped with the two of us stuffed under here. That isn't the case, however. Bogart's desk is absolutely massive. You could probably fit another person easily. Discomfort aside, I do love it here. What a joy it is, to be in a place so low, doing a job that you know that you can handle completely, with no chance of error. In the past, back when I pretended that I was a federal agent, I used to worry about success. I used to think that if I failed in my endeavors, criminals would go free. But those stresses no longer plague me anymore. Now all I have to worry about is pleasuring Dearest. If I can please every nerve ending within its length, then I will know that I have accomplished everything that is ever required of me. It's so lovely to be able to know with certainty that you can succeed in life. No more concerns about what decisions I should make. Everything is so simple. So easy. And so fucking hot. Of course, Bogart does require me to work endlessly at his home, cleaning and doing all the housework. He also requires me to entertain a seemingly endless number of male guests that stop by. It seems that all of my time is spent on my knees. I'm either on the floor scrubbing the tile, or I'm on all fours getting my holes filled. In all honesty, it hardly matters to me. I am serving regardless, and it feels amazing simply to obey. Blair is hard at work as well, polishing Bogart's black leather shoes with her tongue. There is a clear look of subservient pleasure in her eyes. The sounds of her passionate ministrations are muffled, but I'm so close that I can hear them clearly, even over the two men having their discussion. Without warning, Dearest begins to harden slightly, and I pick up my pace, trying to increase his pleasure as quickly as possible. His fat prick elongates, dragging along my tongue as it grows. I can sense as Bogart tries to stifle a shiver of excitement. He only partially succeeds. Gambini is speaking about Thomas and James, I think, but he halts abruptly. Bogart, you realize I'm a busy man, right? I give you the respect to come down here personally, instead of sending one of my men, and you won't even have the fucking common courtesy to wait until I leave before you get your dick sucked? Shit. There is an embarrassed inflection in Bogart's voice as he retorts. Hey, I'm trying to train this bitch on the proper way to treat her owner, and... Yeah, and... Nicholas interrupts, his deep voice flavored with annoyance. Do you know how many women I have ready for my cock at a moment's notice? Unlike you, I had ladies begging to please me before they lost all of their free will. And still, I have the damn tact to wait until I'm not in a fucking meeting to enjoy my playthings. I bet you've never had a federal agent sucking you off, though. With this boast, the cock within my mouth stands at full attention. It's instantaneously hard as steel. Looking up, I can see an evil look of pride beaming from Bogart's face. It sickens me, and it thrills me as well. Yeah, I've got two federal agents under this desk. So excuse me if I want to take full advantage of their services. This meeting was unscheduled. I don't have to apologize to you. Gambini clicks his tongue thoughtfully. You know, I guess you've got me there. I've never had an FBI agent tend to my needs. Until now, I'd never really given it any thought. But now that you mention it, I think I'm interested in experiencing what the Bureau has to offer. There's a dark sense of poetry to that. Who do you have down there anyway?
The pure sense of egotistical glee emanating from Bogart is palpable. Somehow I can taste it, even as I taste the rest of Dearest. His eyes are windows into his prideful soul, and his grin is dripping with dark delight.
Agents Jones and Harris.
Abigail Harris? Gambini exclaims.
That blonde-haired angel must genuinely be a treat.
Even as I continue cramming the cock into my face, I can feel my pulse quicken. How could Nicholas remember me, after all this time? It's been years since I've seen him, and somehow he knows me by my full name? Part of my mind thrums, reminding me that this is obvious. He is a man. Obviously, he's wiser than me. He would remember so much more than I would. It's part of the reason he is one of my masters.
Yes. Abigail Harris.
Bogart is doing his best to keep his voice calm and even, but I have already begun working overtime as I suck him. My orders have not changed. I'm trying my hardest to make him climax yet again. I can see his fingernails gripping into the arms of his desk chair.
Do you think that I could steal her away from you? Just for a day or so? I assure you that I will compensate you for her service and... Damn it, Bogart! Tell her to stop for one fucking second! I'm trying to have a goddamn conversation with you!
There is a terrifying power in that simple command. The words are dripping with authority. With a disappointed grunt, Bogart pats my head, motioning for me to stop. I bring my lips to rest at the base of his bushy cock, and I struggle to look up at him over the flab of his jutting belly.
Abigail, go over to Mr. Nicholas. Blair, take over for her.
Before I can even fully move, Blair pushes me aside, latching onto Bogart's chubby dick like a hungry piglet. Her dark, curly hair is peppered with floor lint from the time she spent tonguing our master's shoes. I can see her eyes rolling back in her head. The ecstasy of servitude is rewarding her body, as she's upgraded from shoe cleaner to cock sucker. She goes to work immediately, dragging her soft mouth over the cock head with a determined sense of purpose. She is well trained. Bogart slides his chair backwards and allows me to slip out from under the desk. Blair trails behind him, her lips holding a vacuum suction on the source of her pleasure. She's already begun rapidly felleting on Dearest, and I can feel a twinge of jealousy rising within my mind. I did all the hard work to get Dearest stiff again, and now she's going to reap my reward. That bitch. All of my envy vanishes immediately as soon as I turn to look at Nicholas. His silvery blue eyes bore into my soul, and I lower my gaze immediately. I am unable to maintain eye contact with him. He is still glaring at me with an unknowable gleam in his eye. He has not changed since the last time I saw him. Impeccably dressed in an expensive suit, with a full, jet-black head of hair, which has not yet begun to show any gray, it is styled to perfection. His face is clean-shaven, and it reveals every attractive inch of his stunning visage. His mere presence exudes masculinity, in a way that Bogart could never hope to achieve. I can feel my heart fluttering. Not with desire, but with awe, fear, and something deeper. I know that this man wishes to possess me. I can sense his dominant need for control in the way that his eyes fix on my body. He is not undressing me with his eyes. No, I sense that my clothes could never offer any resistance to the unabashed force of his will. It is as if my clothing never existed to begin with. Simultaneously, I want to cover myself to hide my shameful weakness, and I want to spread my legs wide for him, to show him any part of me that he might desire. Instead, I do either. I stand with my hands behind my back and my head lowered. The gesture causes my breasts to jut out slightly, presenting my assets to my new owner. I am an object. I need to acknowledge myself thusly. As I take a single step towards him, I can feel a tiny portion of my psyche trying to slow me down. This man is evil. He's a wicked, immoral monster and probably a murderer as well. How could I possibly wish to serve him? I have no idea. His physical attraction is awe-inspiring, but it is not the source of my desire. I long to please this man, regardless of what he's done, because I know in my soul that the strength which he possesses is the exact power I long to submit to. He is the patriarchy, the symbol of its might. Bogart holds a portion of this power, and I am willing to lower myself below his disgusting form and revel in the slimy pleasure that it offers me. But Nicholas is the absolute embodiment of that power. So much purer, so much more raw, than any other man I've served. He has not yet reached middle age, and yet he already runs one of the most influential mafia families in the nation. Such undeniable control is held by this one single entity.
Walk over here, my sweet thing.
His words are simple and quiet, but they are dripping with authority. To disobey these words would be unthinkable. I long to rush over to him and throw myself at his feet, to bathe in the overwhelming control that he will exert over my weak feminine frame, but my feet move slowly, demurely. I must show him that I move to submit to his dominance, not because of my own rapacious lust. It is only proper. His eyes watch me with a possessive gleam. I long to be owned by this man. Hell, I am already owned by this man. I merely long to show him how low I will stoop in my quest to please him.
Thank you, Bogart. I'll make sure you get an extra 20% boost in your weekly payment, in exchange for this lovely agent's time. I'll return her in a few days, no worse for wear.
Abigail, stop!
Bogart's voice is loud and commanding, and yet it still contains only a fraction of the authority that Nicholas' words possessed only seconds ago. Nevertheless, my body freezes in place. My master has spoken, and I am powerless to resist.
You're gonna give me an extra 20% for her?
Try 50.
My time with her is limited, and it's gonna take a hell of a lot more than 20% to steal her away from me.
I can see a calm scowl form on Gambini's face.
Your greed is unbecoming, Bogart. We both know that such a price would be a pittance for me, but we also know that it is more than this woman is worth.
My worth? In a dollar amount? Immediately, my eyes widen. Obviously, Nicholas is right in this instance. I definitely feel like he's overpaying, but 20% seems much closer to my value than 50. 15% would be more realistic.
No, 10%.
Wait, no? Perhaps 5. Or less. The demeaning thoughts swirl down and down, and I can feel my cunt growing slick at the notion.
You can have everything you want outside these walls, Nicholas. But this is my territory. You are a customer who pays for the information and services which I provide. You're not an employer who pays me to work for you, and don't you forget it.
I see Bogart turn to face me.
Abigail, it seems that our guest is not interested in properly compensating me for my things. Get back under my desk, bitch.
I turn to obey.
Wait, Abigail. Come over to me.
Gambini's voice is so cool and calm, but it thunders within my ears like a massive wave crashing upon me. There is so much authority in those words, so much strength. So much potency. My body freezes in place.
Listen, bitch. You're my fucking slave. Now get the fuck back over here.
I can hear the frustration, the visceral, impotent rage seething within Bogart's voice. He is the weaker man. Everyone within the room knows it. But Gregory placed the collar on my neck, and he delivered me over to Bogart. So Bogart, I asked my master. My disgusting, slimy, weak, servile master. To be controlled by such a repellent ruler shames me to my core. And yet, something inside reminds me how fucking hot that is. I cannot argue with it. Nevertheless, Nicholas holds authority within this room. As much as Bogart denies it, we all know that it is true. So who do I obey? My master? Or his master? I don't know. My own psyche is completely silent. I don't get a say in this. Tears begin beating up at the edges of my eyes. I only want to serve. I am like a dog, being called in two different directions. My own desires are irrelevant. Either of these owners will provide me with endless mental pleasure. Why would I care which one of them controls me? I merely want to be humiliated. I don't care who does it. I close my eyes and allow my body to move. In the moment, my mind swoons, and I don't even know which direction I am headed. The two voices have grown silent, as I take step after step. After a lifetime has passed, I open my eyes, and I find myself standing in front of Bogart. The metaphorical clit within my brain trembles, and I bite my lip to stifle a moan as mild pleasure cascades through my body. I have obeyed a man, and received my reward. I have no idea what would have happened if my body had chosen differently. But as the pleasant sensations sweep across my body, I couldn't care less.
That's right, Nicholas. You can't get everything you want. You might think you're hot shit on the street, but I'm not scared of you. Get the fuck out of my office.
There is a subtle hitch in his voice, and I realize that he's just given his load to Blair. Her muffled, rapacious moans send my mind swirling. I've been robbed of my chance to please dearest, and I wasn't even able to pleasure Nicholas in exchange. Yes, I received stimulation for obeying, but it could have been so much better. Blair stole all of my hard work. I hate her so much. Nicholas stands. I expect to see anger, frustration, or some other negative emotion on his face. After all, he lost. The mental image of Gregory scowl as he watched me submit to Bogart blooms in my mind. Surely, Gambini must be feeling all these same emotions. If so, they are not visible. His face is a mask of calm, placidity. He failed in his goal to claim me, but he seems entirely unperturbed.
Very well, Bogart. I'll take my leave for now. Just remember that you obtained this cushy little spot on your own merits, right? You don't owe anything to anyone. And of course, no one could ever take away your position, just like this.
He gives his fingers a brisk snap for emphasis. The sardonic edge to his voice is hidden so deep that I can barely detect it, but it is there. I can sense the paranoia in Bogart's words as he retorts.
I don't owe my success to anyone. I do belong here. And no one is taking anything of mine. Do you understand?
Of course, Bogart. Nicholas smiles, as if nothing is amiss. Stay safe now. 11. The guest Naomi. I watch the young girl playing in her room. Rosemary is such an adorable child. So pure and innocent, with a genuine curiosity that I remember having at her age. She's filling in a coloring book, and she's doing a pretty good job, considering how young she is. I have music almost blaring within the room. It's a safe, sterilized, kids' version of a modern pop song. As I consider the lyrics, the young musician's voice seems increasingly weak and vulnerable. She seems so incredibly subservient. I'd do anything for you.
Woohoo.
Anything you asked me to.
Oh.
Baby, we could be so fine.
Like wine.
If you'll just say.
You're mine.
You're mine. The song is a few years old at this point, but the words now take on a dark, depressing tone to me. The artist who originally performed that song presumably sang it because she wanted some guy to lovingly claim her, and she could ride off with him into the metaphorical sunset. But that isn't what happened. Some man, some fucking monster, probably told her, "You're mine." As she knelt before him, uttering the horrific words that must have been thrumming constantly in her ears. Surely she must have said, "I acknowledge myself owned." Before the collar sealed around her neck, forever snatching away her personhood, her very self. Did her catcher even bother to let her stand before he unzipped his pants and used her? I doubt it, but I guess I'll never know for sure. She was of legal age, and now she dances and sings with a collar encompassing her throat. No less beautiful, but so much less of a person. It's heartbreaking. The music pulses in my ears, and I can feel tears forming at the edges of my lashes. Rosemary turns back to me to display her drawing, and I wipe my eyes immediately. "That's really good, RORO. Very pretty." I struggle to keep the pain hidden in my voice. I think I mostly succeed. The drawing that she has colored is from a book, Beautiful Dresses from Around the Globe. It has line work depicting women's clothes from a dozen or so different countries. All of them are incredibly feminine and traditional. Of course they are. Rachel picked out this book. Why would she give her daughter anything different? Fortunately, Thomas seems to be a little cautious about what media he lets his daughter consume. The music and shows that she's allowed to watch are all safely pre-event. But a book like this? It doesn't even have words, just pictures. Who knows when it was made? There's nothing wrong with it, inherently, but it's just another reminder that women need to dress a certain way and act a certain way, because it's the proper course of action for a person of the weaker sex. I can feel my stomach churning with revulsion. Each day, I find myself trying to shield this innocent girl from the horrors that may await her. Her mother lives in a blissful dream world where servitude is pleasure, but it's all unnatural. She cleans, works, and exercises each day as if every simple, submissive act is the most joyous experience imaginable. Rosemary colors a bit more and holds the page up once again. "How do you like tis dwang, Mrs. Maumee?" Her speech impediment seems worse when she's excited. She grins at me with a childish simplicity that warms my soul. The page is awash with reds, blues, and purples. "I made it her hair blonde, like you. That looks amazing, Rosemary. The yellow is very close to my hair color." My long hair is currently pulled up in a tight ponytail. I always try to pick hair and clothing styles that look nice, because I want to look the part of a submissive, but not too pretty, because I don't want to attract any extra attention from Thomas. So far he hasn't seemed to pay me much mind. Rachel mostly tells me what to do. She's strict, but she hasn't ever been unfair or unkind to me. The music is still pounding loudly as I take Rosemary's coloring book and begin to inspect it more closely. In reality, the shade of yellow that she used isn't nearly as bright as my natural hair color. I doubt she had a crayon to match. My on-page depiction is a girl from some northern country. Her dress is all the wrong colors, but of course Rosemary would have no way of knowing. I freeze suddenly, as all the blood drains from my face. My fingers tremble, and the book threatens to fall from my grip. I struggle to find my voice. "Rosemary, what is that brown line? The one on the..." Instinctively, I cover my mouth, incapable of finishing my sentence. Rosemary immediately intuits what I'm talking about, but if she notices my horror, she doesn't react. "That's your car, Mrs. Maumee." Instinctively, with a shaky hand, I flip through the other pages in the coloring book. Every page has a different woman, colored with childish scribbles. And upon each woman's throat, Rosemary has drawn a brown or black collar. This book was almost certainly published pre-event, so the women depicted have nothing on their necks. Rosemary added one for each girl, apropos of nothing. She's just been imitating what she's been seeing, on the street, on the internet maybe, fuck, she's seen it in her own home. Tears threaten to spill out in earnest, and I turn my head away from her. I can't let her see me cry, but I feel like a horrible person. As I hide in plain sight, pretending to be a collared woman, hoping desperately to never be exposed to the payload. Hell, I'm sending this message to every single person who sees me. I am a willing slave. I am a firm supporter of the patriarchy. I am a shining example of how women should act and behave. Even as young as she is, Rosemary can sense that something is wrong. Mrs. Maumee? Is Ibery Tingote? I'm gonna turn off Tomusik. She steps over to the speaker, reaching out her hand. Wait. I call out immediately. Leave the music on. I force a smile across my face, but I'm certain that my mascara is probably smeared, at least a little. I wanna dance to this music. Don't you? I jump to my feet and start dancing around in my best attempt to seem happy and cheerful. Rosemary begins cackling with uproarious glee, and she starts hopping about as well, swaying to the thumping beat. Baby, we could be so fine. Like wine. If you'll just say, you're mine. You're mine. The lyrics weasel their way into my head, and the tears begin to flow unbidden. I turn my back to the child, as my sobs are drowned out by the song's hook, words that perfectly describe my situation. They epitomize every woman's current stance towards the patriarchy. I'd do anything for you. Woohoo. Anything you asked me to. Oh. The truth is that I have to keep the volume up. I can't let it down even for a moment. Because just down the hall, I know that Rachel is letting her husband fuck her brains out. And I can just barely make out the sounds of her impassioned screams. The music has to stay on, because Thomas has forgotten about his daughter. Before the song can end, I hit restart. Fortunately, the song has a blaring intro. I know that she won't hear any noise coming from the other room. I can tell that she's getting sleepy, and I hope that a cold drink might help her slip down for a nap. It's worked before.
Hey, RORO! You stay right here and keep dancing, okay? I'm gonna go get us some juice boxes. Would you like that? You'll have to wait here, okay? Don't leave! Keep dancing! I'll be right back.
I hold up a finger, motioning for her to stay in place, as I back towards the door. Rosemary nods emphatically. With a hand that hardly feels like mine, I twist the doorknob and slip out, shutting the door behind me as quickly as I can. As soon as it's closed, the music from inside fades and the sounds of lovemaking fill my ears.
No. That isn't right. Lovemaking is not the proper term, because they aren't making any love. They're just fucking. Plain and simple.
The sounds only grow louder as I walk past the bathroom. I want to dart past their bedroom as quickly as possible. I can't though. After all, slave girls don't slink by. They walk slowly, and their steps are delicate and demure. The master is enjoying his fuck session, so why should it bother his property? I remind myself that I must reflect all of these traits. If I stand out, I'll be ruined. As soon as I step into the cracked doorway, my eyes are drawn inside automatically. I don't want to see what's happening in there, but somehow I feel compelled. The lights are dim, but there's enough illumination for me to make out both bodies. Rachel is topless, riding Thomas with a wild abandon. Her moans are so loud and passionate, she sounds like a porn star, but I know she isn't faking anything. Her entire body is glistening with sweat, and her brunette hair is swirled around her head haphazardly. I saw it pinned up in a bun this morning, but her violent gyrations have clearly worked a large portion of the strands free. As soon as my shadow fills the doorway, Thomas sits up, thrashing with the blankets to cover their joining. His fearful eyes stare in my direction, and as soon as he sees my face, I see the panic fade.
Oh, Naomi, it's you! I was afraid for a second it was Aroaro.
So he didn't forget his daughter. But he didn't think to silence his wife or close the bedroom door? What if it had been Rosemary? What then? I try to look away, but not so much that it appears conspicuous. I imagine that it'll be safe to lower my gaze and watch from my periphery. Rachel is still pumping madly, intent on pleasing him, even in their new awkward position. Her moans are just as loud as before. They might have gotten even louder since I showed up. Thomas pats her shoulder lovingly and gives her a light shush. She silences her cries immediately. Of course she does. She's so obedient.
I realize that we probably got a little noisy, but I also noticed that Rosemary was playing some loud music. I guess the songs mostly drowned us out, huh?
There is the slightest embarrassed edge to his voice, but it is so faint that I can barely tell. He's becoming so accustomed to having sex with me nearby. His sense of modesty concerning me seems to be waning rapidly. I nod dutifully in response to his question. I'm trying my best to hide the disgust from my face. After all, it was my decision to turn on the music, but if I hadn't been there, what would they have done? Clearly, Thomas has the ability to silence Rachel. And yet he chose not to. Part of me still wants to believe that he cares about his daughter. Just not enough. And of course he won't bother to thank me for tending to Aroaro. I'm just his humble slave. He believes that I want to do all of this because of the payload. Ironically, everything I do is indeed because of the payload, but not the way he thinks.
I guess the music was your idea, Naomi?
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Damn it. My teeth grind with frustration. Tom's so infuriating. Whenever I think I can fully trust him, he seems to slip downward and show me signs that he'll become the monster that I fear. However, whenever I decide that he's a lost cause, and he's completely forgotten about my humanity, he'll do some tiny gesture to remind me that he values my personhood. I can never get a solid bead on him. Thomas is still adjusting the sheets, making sure that Rachel's ass is covered up. She's still entirely topless, though. I always feel like Thomas's views on exhibitionism are oddly inconsistent. It isn't like he ever tries to let me see, but he hasn't stopped Rachel in her constant attempts to show off. He seems to notice Rachel's toplessness as an afterthought, and he whispers to his wife. Rachel reaches up and covers her breasts with her arms. As she continues grinding on his lap, she turns to look at me, and even in the darkness, I can see a disgusting gleam in her eye. She wants me to see this. I don't fully understand what the payload is wanting from her, but I'm not blind. Some part of her enjoys it whenever I see her and Thomas together. Ironically, or perhaps not, Rachel never displays sexual behavior when Tom isn't here. While Tom is at work, she and I have tons of time alone, but she's never once done anything lewd or immodest. Of course not. What good is a sapphic display if there's no man around to be enticed by it? I let out an almost imperceptible huff of annoyance. Thomas stares at me, almost guiltily.
Can you close the door please, Naomi?
Thank you.
I nod like the good little slave that I am and pull the door closed. As soon as it's shut, I can hear a gentle word from Thomas, and Rachel screams out once more in ecstasy. I immediately hear their bed begin to squeak again, and the muffled sounds of their combined moans slip through the door. For reasons beyond my understanding, I can feel my face flush with embarrassment. It isn't that part of me wants to be with Thomas.
No.
I assure myself of that. I mean, if I'm being 100% honest, I will admit that he is good looking. He's not a hunk or anything, but he is, well, he's
conventionally attractive.
I suppose. And I guess I've always had a thing for blonde guys. Especially men with stunning blue eyes. And on top of that, he's really fit.
That's good.
For him, I mean.
It's fortunate for him, and Rachel.
Well, I mean. I say that it's good for Rachel, but honestly, it isn't like she cares. She's in love with the drug-like pleasure that the payload gives her mind every day. She'd fuck any guy if it stimulated her programmed brain. So she really doesn't deserve a handsome guy like Thomas. As if I care what that brainwashed bimbo has. I shake my head. That isn't fair of me. Rachel is sick. Literally, she's been infected with a vile, man-made mental poison. It makes her a perfect wife. But it also removes any idiosyncratic nuances that used to make her a real person. She is a blank slate, waiting to be written up on and customized by the patriarchy. It breaks my heart when you compare her current state to the woman that Rachel clearly used to be. In the guest bedroom, there is a massive bookshelf full of Rachel's old books. Romance, mystery, and drama novels line the shelves. She used to read quite a bit, apparently. Of course, now she doesn't bother with that at all. Now her mind constantly simmers with one solitary thought. How can I lower myself further for Thomas? It's all she thinks about. She's incapable of appreciating his affection. She was blessed with a handsome, loving husband, but now she doesn't value it anymore. She'd be just as happy with a hideous, abusive man. What a waste. I close my eyes as I attempt to banish these thoughts. Why am I thinking about Thomas and his level of attractiveness? I chide myself, but my mind continues to ponder. Being trapped in this house with a couple who fuck like rabbits certainly doesn't help. The constant exposure to their ravenous sex life is taking an unexpected toll on me. Rachel is willing to present herself to Thomas in any room, at any time. She started wearing sundresses most days, and they often won't even bother undressing before he takes her. He'll bend her over the kitchen table, the living room couch, or the washing machine. He almost seems as insatiable as she does. I overheard Thomas saying something about knocking her up. So I guess they're trying for another kid. Why anyone would want to bring a child into this fucked up world now, I can't imagine. What if it's a daughter? You'd only be creating another future slave. The last thing I'd ever want would be to get pregnant now, and either give birth to another servant, or another master. Once in the kitchen, I open the refrigerator, looking for the juice boxes. The fridge is ridiculously well organized. I mean, it isn't surprising. Rachel keeps the entire house immaculate, as any fucking brainwashed wife would do. She wouldn't dream of allowing her husband to see the house in disarray. That would be unthinkable. Involuntarily, I roll my eyes. Upon retrieving the drinks, I close the fridge door, and I can see Rachel's list that she made. The second item on the list says that Thomas has to help with the house cleaning. I'm sure he'd still keep his word on that, if there was anything to clean when he gets home in the evenings, but of course, there isn't. Another item on the list says that he can't collar other women. I made him throw that one out of the window too. Still, it seems like he's trying to stay strong. Thomas still does the yard work, just like the list says. He doesn't cook anymore though, because that's become my job. But at least by cooking and tending to Rosemary, I can make myself useful. I don't want Thomas to consider me a burden. I'll serve him faithfully as a maid and a cook. I don't want his mind wandering to anything else that a woman could provide him. Hell, Rachel is there for his sexual needs constantly. He wouldn't have time for a second fucktoy. The list on the fridge does ban blow jobs and anal. I suppose Thomas has kept his word about that. I would have no way of knowing if he was putting it in her ass, but I've walked in on them more than once, by accident, and I've never seen him inside her mouth. Also, she couldn't scream like she does with her mouth spread around a cock. I shake my head, trying to rattle some sense into myself. I need to get Thomas's sex life out of my mind. Thinking about it can't do me any good. I hear the doorbell chime. Down the hall, Rachel is still calling out with the bitterest delight. Her voice is still loud, but at least with the door shut, it isn't as loud. With the juice boxes in my hands, I walk to the front door. I reach out and place my hand on the knob when a terrifying thought hits me. What if it's James at the door? Thomas doesn't have a peephole. He has a porch camera, but I don't have access to the feed. A real part of me is still terrified of James. While I can't prove it, I am 100% positive that he was planning to collar me the day that I met him and Thomas. I desperately want to tell Thomas about it, but I worry how that might look. I'm supposed to be a payload-addled slave. Why would I ever try to accuse a man of attempting to collar me? Would a woman who is actually programmed do something like that? I have no way of knowing for sure, but I don't think so. Worst of all, Thomas seems to trust him completely. I don't know if Thomas is just so eager for a single friend that he's willing to overlook any sign that James isn't the man he's pretending to be, or what. I know that besides James, most guys don't seem like they like Thomas very much. It's no secret that he is on a mission to shut down the payload. And of course, it's no secret that he collared both me and Rachel. I can see a subtle look of anger and envy in the faces of most of the guys who look at him. A week ago there was a barbecue at this house. Several of Tom's coworkers and family came. The men all brought their collared wives and girlfriends, of course. The rest of the men talked amongst themselves, and they were all polite with Thomas. But there was clearly distaste in their interactions with him. Only James acts kind or friendly towards him, but I don't trust that fucker one iota. Thomas was cordial back, but he did end up getting into a heated debate with his brother-in-law over the payload. None of the guys at the cookout openly support the payload. They all say it's terrible. They say that, right before they boss their women around and probably whisper about wife swapping. They keep that topic away from Thomas, I think. I realize that I'm stalling in front of the door. As long as it isn't James, I'm fine, but the idea that it might be. I mean, I don't think that James would try anything with me. As far as he knows, I'm Thomas's plaything, even if he believes that Thomas doesn't fuck me, which I'm certain everyone else doubts, that wouldn't give him the right to do anything to me. I belong to Thomas. I mean, as far as he's concerned, I belong to Thomas. I wince at the way that I've already begun letting the role I play seep over into my own personal thoughts. When the doorbell chimes again, I consider ignoring it. I could always pretend I didn't hear. Or I could go and get Thomas. No. I think a good slave girl would probably open the door, and that is who I'm pretending to be. If I get lax in my performance, I'll give myself away. How ironic that pretending to be a slave is functionally identical to being a slave for real, in so many ways. I laugh bitterly at the absurdity of my situation. Every woman in the world is a slave being rewarded by the payload for their obedience. I'm obeying for free. At least if I had the payload, I'd be coming myself at every submissive act. I scoff at the idea and grit my teeth. I shouldn't make jokes like that, but sometimes I feel like gallows humor is all I have left in the world. I open the door a crack and peek out. Hello? I see no one. Looking down, I see a cardboard box sitting on the welcome mat. It is a package, completely unmarked. The door swings open, and I step forward to inspect it. As I kneel down to pick it up, there is a flash of movement to my left. A hand snatches forward, sealing around my wrist in a vice-like grip. I start to scream, but only a gasp escapes my lips as the arm snatches forward, and I am caught in a powerful grip. I can't see my attacker, but I feel his hand clamp around my mouth. I got you now, bitch! The voice growls, and my terror spikes to unimaginable levels. You got away from me before, but not this time. Oh my God! Someone help! I want to scream, but the hand over my mouth prevents any sound from escaping. Even without the fingers muffling my mouth, I haven't yet struggled or tried fighting. I've been living as a slave for long enough now that something forces me to maintain that role, even as the crippling fear floods my entire psyche. I was so afraid of James, fuck, I was so afraid that James would capture me, I never even once considered how much worse it could be. The immovable arms of Henry, my foster father, coil around me, and I realize that James would have been a mercy. The end. You have been listening to this podcast on the Erotica Podcast Network. Please visit our other podcasts, their links are in the description of this episode. The Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content.